Anyway, Dumelang, Dan Manani, good morning everybody. Abu Udi. And I am Du. Honorable members, good morning. Let me welcome you. Let me welcome the department, Sanedi, and Sari within the department. Hopefully one of these days we'll say, let's just welcome Sari on its own and all those who have attended today. As part of our cycle, budget review cycle, and also as part of our preparations for the budget vote, we go through presentations and briefings by initial the department and the various entities under the department or linked to the department towards the budget vote, which is our primary focus at this stage in time. And the budget vote being on the 17th of May. Yeah, so I trust and hope we'll all be there after all the build-up we've done. Today, we have Sanedi, who has brought us quite volumes of information, and I trust and hope members had gone through the initial document and also presentations have been shared with us. Now we'll have to do a lot of time management because I can see Sanit is more than prepared, is over prepared to make presentations for us. We'll be guided by Sanedi in any case as to how they are going to do the presentation. And maybe just before we start, we'll have to negotiate that and how we do it, because we also have to give time for response and questions. For questions and clarity seeking from our side. Having said that, can I then ask Mr. Kotze to give us apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. I received two apologies, one from Honorable Maloto, who had to attend an urgent meeting in Johannesburg, Chair, and then also Honorable Tselau, who indicated that he's running late, but he will be joining us, Chairperson. Those are the apologies, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to Sanedi. Before you start, Sanedi, can you just indicate to us how you're going to work out your presentation or your briefing arrangement?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to yourself and to honorable members of the committee. What we're proposing is that I'll take you through an introductory presentation. Some of the members might have actually seen some of this before, but it does set the context for the presentations that follow. We've assembled a team of senior managers, which I'd like to introduce in a short while. They'll be presenting each one of the key thematic areas that we focus on, and that forms the basis of the annual performance plan, which is the 2012-13 performance plan. So the context that I'm giving you is the strategic plan, which will be about 15 minutes, followed by the series of presentations with your indulgence, which talks to each of the key thematic areas. The one of our colleagues is delayed at the airport, so he'll be arriving shortly, Chair, Gary Bredenkamp, on energy efficiency. So I must apologize that members don't have a copy of that presentation, a hard copy yet, so we will provide that in the course of the morning.
Make sure he comes, particularly when you say energy efficiency, because if he doesn't turn up, he's meat. In June, we're going to have a four-day session, 4 days on energy efficiency. So once you say energy efficiency, you must know our members' ears, you know, stands up, because we know that the build-up towards the June event, we really would be very keen to listen to other things. But I'm sure you'll work out to Ms. Nesekotse as soon as they arrive, how we can get the documents on energy efficiency distributed. That's fine. Over to you, then, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning again. Chair, just by way of introduction, I'd just like to introduce our management team, with the exception of Barry Bredenkamp, who's on his way. Just to introduce our colleagues, starting at my far left, we've got David Mahuma, representing Working for Energy. Next to him, Derek Batch, representing the Green Mobility Program, as well as New Business. Next to me,
maybe as you go through, not mention the name, but just a few seconds,
sure,
about the areas or the sections or units, great, that they are in.
Sure, thanks, Chair. Let me just go backtrack a bit and go back to David's area. Chair, you will recall that more than 3 years ago now, former Minister of Finance Trevor Manuel announced the program Working for Energy as a follow-on to the successful Working for Various Things programs under the Expanded Public Works program. Now, the Working for Energy program has been in incubation for the past 3 years. There have been some challenges, which we'll talk about later in David's presentation, with regards to alignment with the department's priorities in as far as the development of both rural as well as centralized energy options. And we'll talk about that in a while. But certainly Working for Energy's key focus has got to be on job creation, particularly in previously disadvantaged areas, particularly rural communities, where we're not only providing energy, but we're also making productive use of that energy, as well as in some cases conserving energy and still creating job opportunities. So for us, it's a vital contributor to the green economy and the new growth path aspirations of the country. Next to David is Derek. Derek looks after the new business side as well as the green transport area. Members will recall from previous presentations that we established a center in Midrand with the intention of developing new transport options based on alternative fuels, in particular compressed natural gas, LPG, electric vehicles, and biofuel-powered vehicles. So that operation has been running for at least the past 3 or 4 years in Midrand. We've just recently taken a decision to move our facility most likely to the CSR because of the interaction that we have with the CSR, and also because we have a strong link to the Department of Science and Technology as a funder, as well as the Department of Transport, who also Derek will allude to as now a funder of the Green Transport Program. What's exciting is that we've done a number of conversions, which will be referred to in the presentation. The idea is that we've shown, even in the case of taxis, that we can actually introduce a commercial case for taxis to convert to LPG petrol hybrid solutions, simply because the LPG is so much more cost-effective for them. It's as efficient almost as petrol, and it's readily available. Unfortunately, the refueling facilities are not always present, but that's why you have a hybrid system. So where you cannot access the appropriate refueling facility, you can revert back to petrol. And the payback period on the conversion is less than a year for these taxis. And this is why they're embracing the technology. It doesn't take up that much space either in the vehicle, so there's no loss in terms of revenue from sales and in terms of commuters. So very exciting opportunities. I think Jerry will allude to that later. Deshni is our head of corporate services, and she'll be discussing the support services function, just to highlight the administrative area of Saneti and what's involved. In particular, bearing in mind that under the Saneti business case, which was approved both by Parliament, if you like, in terms of the committee's inputs, as well as to the various government departments that have a role to play, in that business case, we made provision for about 66 staff members for Saneti over the next year or two. The practicalities of that are somewhat challenging because to implement a structure of that kind requires significantly more funding than we have access to right now. So the question is, where do we balance out the requirement for appropriate support services, combining that with the need to actually have more technical proficiency in the case of project management and engineering capacity to undertake the projects that we do undertake. So that's been a balancing act, and additionally we'll allude to the numbers as they are, as well as for what's required in that area. To my immediate right, Manish Bypass, who looks after the end-use and infrastructure area, which includes smart grids. Now, smart grids has been a topic of discussion for some time. There's lots of interest in the area without anything practically happening on the ground. Now, we've been very fortunate that a colleague of ours, Dr. Willy De Beer, formerly of EDI Holdings, has joined us working on the smart grids program. Now, he brings with him a wealth of experience from EDI Holdings and ESCOM, and the reality is that it's going to take a combination of efforts from all the key stakeholders, ESCOM, the municipalities, the various telecommunication companies that will be involved as a private sector, and even consumers, to be able to put a blueprint in place for how smarter goods should be rolled out in a country. And the presentation will focus on establishing a vision, first of all, for the country in terms of what a smart grid future would look like, how realistic is it, over what time frame, what is required in the short term to get us to the point where we know what we have to spend and what we're going to get out of such an initiative. So that's what we will cover under Smarter Grids. Following Manish is Tembakazi Mali. She represents the Clean Energy Solutions environment, in particular focusing on renewable energy. One of the key areas that we're involved in right now is pulling together the research capabilities of the universities in this country that are contributing to renewable energy research. And why this is critical is because, as you can imagine, in academia, you have lots of academics involved in pet projects. So they've been running the same project for 10 years because that's what they know, that's what gives them a competitive advantage. This is where they get funding from. So what we'd like to do is to align their research into common objectives and goals, and to bring different academics with similar skills into a common project environment. And I think, Chair, our colleague Barry has joined us, so I think he got your message about the meet. But
just that I didn't link the name to the face,
which
I know.
You know very well, Chair. And in any case, Chair, so he has his presentation there as well. The issue around the Renewable Energy Center, it's called RECORD, the Renewable Energy Center of Research and Development. It's a virtual center. We're not trying to create added bureaucracy. We're not trying to create an added layer of research to duplicate effort. We're trying to pull together all the efforts of the key universities that are involved in research, and there are many. Nelson Mandela Metro is excellent in the case of conventional polycrystalline PV. UJ, very good on thin film. UCT, very good in terms of ocean energy system and so on. So we're trying to package all of that together, Chair, and produce a resource where we've got the technical skills, where we can develop our own products where the need exists, and where we can also help create support for industry in their implementation plan. So RECORD, very important, but there are also a number of other projects that are being undertaken. Recovery of salt from acid mine water, from drainage, to be able to use that in concentrated solar power plants. Tembakazi will go through a few areas that we're covering. The Wind Atlas, of course, was one of the more well-known products out of that area, and of course we just recently launched the first draft of the Wind Atlas of Southern Africa. Next to Tembakazi is Tony Sarich. Members, I'm sure, will have seen his face before. Tony looks after advanced fossil fuels, and in particular we're focusing on carbon capture and storage today. So there's a whole... There are more areas, of course. There's the clean coal, there's a coal roadmap, which Tony will discuss, as well as the carbon capture and storage, the center, which is called South African Center for Carbon Capture and Storage. He'll go through the time frames that are going to take us through to the commercial pilot, which is still scheduled for about 2020. and take you through some of the issues which are being addressed now, which are necessary for us to understand before we can proceed any further. Bearing in mind that carbon capture and storage will have a cost implication, it will have an energy penalty, it will have some form of environmental impact, although I'm sure that given the other projects that have taken place around the world, that these are manageable. But there's obviously a lot of ground to cover before we can confidently state to the country that this is a blueprint for rolling out carbon capture and storage. So Tony will take us through that. Next to Tony is Ms. Zungu. Welcome. Representing the department, so I can't take you through all her proficiencies. I think the last area then, as we move around, I've spoken about Willie's inputs, is Barry, who's just joined us. Barry will be taking us through energy efficiency, and Chair, you made reference to your four-day session that's coming up in June. It's probably coming at exactly the right time, because we are grappling at present with the issues around aligning purpose between various entities within the government architecture. Energy efficiency is by nature a cost-cutting area, and the reality is that there are many functional areas within government that can rightfully claim ownership of certain aspects of energy efficiency. The key for us, though, Chair, is who plays that role of coordinating at the ground those efforts. And you spoke earlier, Chair, about phasing out of incandescents. It's taking us more than 10 years, Chair, to get to the point where we can say we have something in place, but we are by no means there at the point where we can roll out or at least phase out incandescents. The same argument applies for appliance labeling, where we're still no closer to having an appliance label on most products. The list can go on, Chair. There are many such instances where government buildings, classic example, numerous projects have been started around public buildings. We just don't have a concerted and coordinated program around public buildings. Now, this is what we envisage Sanedi's role to be. It's not to be player and referee in the space, but rather to be focused around designing and project managing the appropriate programs and then assisting in making sure that we have the monitoring and evaluation process in place to make sure that the ministry, to make sure that Parliament is fully aware of how far we are in terms of implementing energy efficiency in relation to national targets, etc. So for us, Chair, it's a critical time in terms of defining what that space is that Sanedi should play a role in. So I think that's
just before I forget, it might be helpful that as one of the major players in energy efficiency, you coordinate with us and the department, Mamzoon, on how we prepare for that four-day session. It's, we're not yet in detail, but we just said as a committee we'll invest sizable amount of time on energy efficiency. Two-day public hearings, a visit to one or two energy efficiency projects, and then get one other day just to get responses from the department and whatever. But we're open enough from our side as well that if you come with suggestions. But the main thing is to maximize impact and use it as one of the launching pads to advance energy efficiency campaign. Not just a program, but campaign. Because that's what it needs at this stage in time. Yeah. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, for the suggestion and the offer, I'm gratefully appreciated. Chair, so I think given the time constraints that we may have imposed on us today, I'm going to take us quickly to the strategic plan, the overview. It sets the context, as I said, for what follows. So you appreciate the design of the programs that Sanedi is implementing, as well as the context for the funding, which will obviously become a central focus for us later on. So in terms of the context, first of all, at an international level, Chair, the most important thing to consider is that everybody internationally is aware of the need to move to a lower carbon trajectory in the future. That is common understanding and knowledge, and COP17 in South Africa would bear witness to that. The reality, though, is that people don't appreciate that it takes a fundamental shift in our thinking to get us there, and it comes through in various forms. It could be in the form of policy, it could be in technology interventions, but also, most importantly, it has to be in society's behavior. So all those elements have to come together if you are actually going to be able to move the country into a lower carbon future. Now, this is probably one of the most important slides that we have today, because it really sets the context for what we have to achieve. And this is the landscape as it is right now, looking from 2011 forward to 2040. And what it does do is it shows you the key milestones in terms of strategies and policies and legislations, and even in some cases plans, that contextualizes our thinking with respect to key energy deliverables. So, for instance, we started off with COP17, and at COP17, one of the key breakthroughs that we were able to achieve was that we managed to get carbon capture and storage firmly onto the Clean Development Mechanism agenda, which has been an important step forward for CDM and for carbon capture and storage. So already we know that some of the interventions that we are planning will have some value from that perspective. Then, of course, we've got various iterations of IRPs, staggered roughly every 2 years, that set the blueprint for capacity expansion in the electricity sector. What's important to note here is that the current options that are included in there are based on proven concepts only. Our role in Feneti really has to be to enhance that thinking by bringing in the newer technologies that are value to add, particularly the indigenous technologies that are developed here, and making sure that they can find their way into IRPs. There are other important targets that have to be met in this time frame as well. The Renewable Energy and White Paper has a target in 2013 for the 10,000 gigawatt hour. The Energy Efficiency Strategy has a target of a 12% reduction, which is by 2015. And then as you go along, you can see that under the LTMS, which is the Long-Term Mitigation Scenarios work, you'll find that there are various key points here, in particular 2024, where our emissions are expected to plateau out, and from there on to remain at the same levels until roughly 2035, when they're expected to decline. This is really what's contained in the climate change response strategy. Now, important consideration is that when emissions do peak, they're expected to peak at about 550 million tons of CO2 equivalent per annum. And the climate change response strategy has indicated that probably about 40% of that should come from the energy sector, although the IRP itself has said that perhaps 50% of those emissions should actually be reduced by the energy sector. So that's an onerous responsibility for the energy sector. So to get us there, we need to change the way we look at financing and the way we need to look at the technology options that are involved. The platform that we're building at the moment is based on two important building blocks. One is to make sure that energy innovation happens and that it happens in an environment which is conducive to its deployment in terms of technologies. Also, that we can conserve our energy as a first prize, because the rationale for that is that we achieve more by saving than we actually do by constructing. And we can create more jobs in the process. The notion of energy conservation leading to job losses is not true. The Philips project in Lesotho is a good example, where we have created a facility which is producing compact fluorescent lights and creating value in the process. And the same argument applies to LED, new and more energy efficient appliances, etc., insulating building materials, etc. So this is the fundamental building blocks. Of course, job creation has to be a critical component to this if we're going to achieve a semblance of a sustainable energy future. So Feneti's vision, to encapsulate that briefly, is to serve as a catalyst for sustainable energy innovation, transformation and technology diffusion, with the ultimate objective, of course, of supporting South Africa's sustainable development objectives. To take that a step further, our mission then is to advance the innovation of the clean energy solutions and rational energy use, that's more on the energy efficiency side, to effectively support our national energy mandate and that transition to a sustainable, low energy and low carbon future. So very specifically, to pick up out of the vision, we serve as a catalyst. So our role is really not to be, as I said, player and referee in most cases. It's really to be the catalyst that drives the implementation of key areas that supports that. So our mandate, our primary mandate, comes out of the National Energy Act of 2008 that makes provision for us to conduct energy research as well as to promote energy efficiency throughout the economy. Now, just to look at our role in relation to the context that I provided earlier, we have established three important goals. These goals are all linked up to that strategic context that I outlined earlier. So, for instance, if we take our first and one of our most important goals, which is to ensure that there is well-informed and high-confidence energy planning, decision-making, and policy development in the country, our role is to support that through appropriate interventions. Data is key, knowledge management is key, having the necessary planning tools and planning products,
those all contribute to ensuring that the country is in a position to make well-informed energy decisions. To accelerate the transformation to a less energy and carbon-intensive economy involves obviously job creation and the diffusion of more efficient, more sustainable technologies. So for us, job creation critical. If you look at the issues around the new growth path and the job creation targets, this goal talks in particular to that one. And then lastly, of course, is to foster this culture of a more rational use of energy. And this is where our energy efficiency objectives come into. As you can see, they're all aligned in one way or another to key outputs in the course of that horizon. To just further develop those goals, I'm not going to take you through a lot of detail except to say that we need to develop a sound technology base. This is for goal one. We need a sound technology base that's going to allow both planners, policymakers, the public to get a better sense of what information exists out there and how they're able to effectively utilize that for planning purposes. Secondly, in terms of accelerated transformation goal, the idea is to stimulate the green energy industry development through the appropriate capacity building programs, the appropriate job creation opportunities, etc., to allow us to be able to create a new industry around low energy and low carbon technologies. Last of all, of course, we have to make sure that we can actually introduce this culture of energy efficiency in the country, and to do that, we've set up various goals. And we'll talk about those strategic objectives in a while, but those strategic objectives talk to direct measurables that you'll be able to track over a five-year period and ascertain for yourself how effective Senedi is. Coming out of those three goals, we've established six thematic programs, if you like. These priority programs, with the exception of support services, are really the heart of the research program of Senedi and the implementation side as well. And so applied energy research contains the areas such as green transport, carbon capture and storage, smart grids, etc. So that's all housed under that particular program. Program two is data knowledge management that houses our open energy database functionality, which supports the Department of Energy. It houses our energy efficiency database and everything else that goes with that. Program three is
Would that be the function or program that would help us, amongst other things, to address data collection or data management generally?
Sure, there are a number of areas or facets to consider here. First of all, the Department of Energy is very active at the moment in setting up the National Energy Database, if you like, which is where our collaboration comes into it. We have established a center called CESA, which is the Center for Energy Systems Analysis and Research, which is a partnership between ourselves, the University of Pretoria, and the University of... it's Pretoria and QCT, ERC. And the intention behind CESA is to provide not only the energy planning tools, but also to help in formulating the data collection methodologies that support the collection of that data. Now, there is a Swiss-funded project on energy efficiency at the moment, which is looking at the monitoring and evaluation side to make sure that we actually have the tools in place, including the data and the methodologies, to collect the necessary information on energy efficiency. So the project has started. It's really still in its infancy at the moment, but it will contribute a lot to what you're looking at here. And our role is to help support those particular activities. We will have our own energy efficiency database anyway because of the tax incentive work we do. Chair, you'll recall that we are the certification authority for the Section 12 I and Section 12 L tax rebates for energy efficiency improvements, 12 I being on industry and 12 L being more general. And so our role is to provide the verification function to Department of Trade and Industry and to SARS that the industries that have made the necessary improvements have in fact realized the energy efficiency savings in order for them to qualify for the tax rebate. So we have our own energy database to help monitor that process. Thanks, Chair. So in addition to on the low energy and carbon intensity innovation, that's really designed to help stimulate innovation in the country by supporting key projects and programs. There's job creation in Program 4, but very specialized. So looking in particular at the areas around academia and supporting research chairs, our own centers at the universities and so on, working for energy, which is more bottom of the pyramid job creation, but also at a technical level able to produce the technologies and the support for the implementation of technologies for decentralized systems as well as energy efficiency. And lastly, the energy efficiency program, which we'll talk about in more detail. So if you look at the Senedi establishing business case, it was always important for us to make sure that we remain focused and aligned to that business case. So each of the key priority programs from 1 to 6 is in some way or other directly aligned to the objectives that specified not only in the Energy Act but also in the Senedi business case. And let's just highlight it for your reference purposes. Similarly, we have made sure that the programs that we're introducing are aligned to the departmental programs in terms of their own five-year strategic plan, as well as to the minister's KPIs, which are really essentially based on government outcomes. At the bottom of that slide, you'll see the references to the particular programs where in government where Senedi's role is deemed to be in support of. So this is really just further evidence that there's alignment between ourselves and the department, as well as the minister's key performance indicators.
Sorry, I thought I'd pick up a few. As we go along, just try to help us a little bit to expand on technology diffusion.
Okay.
Which areas illustrate this technology diffusion?
Thank you, Chair. What will happen is as we go through the details of presentations, we'll actually be able to flesh that out. My presentation isn't meant to be technology specific at this stage, so what will happen is when the other presentations come through, we can actually focus in more on that and show you where technology innovation is happening and where technology diffusion is required as well. It will also lend itself to discussion later on, Chair, which talks to the need for a national technology innovation plan, as well as a strategy around technology diffusion. Because the reality, Chair, is that choices are being made, policy decisions are made, financing opportunities are actually made available on what premise. Certainly there are choices. We spoke earlier about the jewel and that they're battling to lure investors to support the jewel. The reality is, on what basis do we make decisions like that in the country? And this is a point that comes back to a common principle. Does South Africa want to be a technology leader, which means you're a world leader in a certain type of technology? Do you want to be a fast follower, or do you just want to be an adapter? And you have to choose by technology type, what is it that you want to do? You have to accept that there's a cost implication to be a world leader, and you have to maintain that position. To be a fast follower, a cost implication, but at least the risk is not so much there. Adapter, well, off the shelf, but at least you can commercialize quite easily. Slower to market, you don't have the IP, but you have a workable solution. Now, you need a strategy around that that says, right, if you're in the energy space, what is it that you want? Do you want a locally developed vehicle? Do we need one? Do we need a new reactor, a nuclear reactor? Maybe, maybe not. Do we need a new crude oil refinery? Do we need a thin fuels refinery? Do we need a bio refinery? Those are critical decisions that have to come out and refresh out of a strategy chain. And that's the thinking we're probably going to leave you with, is that your role in that is critical, is to help government departments make those type of informed decisions. If South Africa is going to spend 20 billion rand, for instance, on a new nuclear research program, this is just arbitrary numbers, the rationales for that should be, we're going to be creating jobs. We have a competitive edge that we can maintain. That's going to be your driver. If it's not going to be that, then you might as well just be an adapter and go and buy French or Russian or American technology off the shelf, or even Chinese. Go and buy it off the shelf. It's so much easier. So those are the key decisions. If you look at Eskom's planning, Eskom has decided, let's go off the shelf. We don't need the risk. They'd rather do that. This is why they're happy that PBMR is shelf, because they want to go low risk. They want to buy off the shelf. Our role is to help mitigate some of that risk where the country deems it appropriate to do that. That is really where we see the critical role we play, Chair.
The catalytic role.
Catalytic role, exactly. But it can't be us leading. It's got to be led by Parliament. It's got to be led by government. They've got to say, right, here is your national strategy. This is what Cabinet has said we want to do. We want to be adapters of nuclear technology. However, on biofuels, we may choose to be leaders. Why? Because we may, at a regional level, this comes back to another point that you raised earlier, Chair, at a regional level, it makes sense for SADC to be involved in biofuels. If, and this is just, I know there's no such thing as off the record, but the reality is, if foreign governments want to put us under pressure to limit imports of crude oil from places like Iran, they have to be willing to put something else in its place. because they have the technology and the IP to invest in, for instance, in biofuel reactor plants, particularly those based on newer technologies, second generation lignocellulosic extraction plants, let them put their money down, let them invest here in the country and produce that. You can at least displace maybe 5% of our petrol requirements, not diesel necessarily, but petrol, using biofuel reactors like that for bioethanol purposes. That's a strategy. And it says, right, how much are you willing to put into that? If you're going to build another crude oil refinery, for instance, it comes at a cost to the economy. The price of crude oil is going the wrong way. It's never going to come down. We know that. So what's going to be the outcome of that? Yes, we may have 1,000 jobs being created during the refining process. The reality, though, is the cost to the economy is so much greater. The cost to the economy of actually building a biofuel reactor is more than maybe a crude oil refinery. However, the longer-term implications are massive savings down the road. So that's the type of decision chair that's needed. And even Eskom has said to us the other day in our Smart Grid workshop, Seneti's role for them is helping to assist government to reach a point where they can have a strategy in place and be able to use it themselves to define exactly that. So I think that's going to be a critical discussion point later, Chair. Right. The rest of the presentation, well, it's mainly focused around these programs, but before I do that, the indicators that we're using. In terms of being able to measure the effectiveness, the efficacy of the programs that we've introduced, we've had to introduce a measure. The measure is taken from the IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change, where you look at the CO2 intensity of the economy, which is a combination of two important factors. One is the energy intensity, which in other words is the measure of how much energy industry uses, residences use, etc. like that, and also the CO2 intensity, the emission profile of that energy use. And what you want at the end of the day is to measure the carbon intensity of the economy. There's another factor there, which is that you look at the CO2 intensity as a measure of per capita growth. But our role isn't necessarily focused around maintaining population growth or reducing population growth. So we focus on the ones that are probably more influenceable, let's put it that way. And that is CO2 intensity and energy intensity of industry. All right, these are the strategic objectives, Chair. I'm going to run through them very quickly because I don't think this is critical for the presentation today. I do think it's key to note the following things. First of all, Seneti has put in place SMART objectives. SMART is not our definition, so it's specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-bound. And these strategic objectives relate to five-year deliverables for each of the programs, and they relate to different things. For instance, reducing, in the first case, emissions intensity of certain technologies to less than 40 grams of CO2 per megajoule. So that's our emissions intensity target that you'll see over a five-year period. There are other targets that you'll see in there. The last one in particular is being able to consolidate energy public research spending to make sure that we are consistent with the goal of 1.5% of GDP and making sure that that is about in the order of about, it's about 1.8 billion rand, which is roughly the spend that should come from the public sector. So this is where you should be in 5 years' time if you're going to be internationally competitive, is that between the different role players in R&D in this country, you should be spending that order of magnitude for you to be internationally competitive. On data knowledge management, it's about setting up a technology management center by 2017 that will house the functionality that we spoke about earlier, Chair, which is the database functionality, the planning functionality, the skills building, that you have the necessary planning tools to be able to develop the modeling that you need in this country to help advance the relevant thinking. You also need to make sure that you have, in the case of...
which is one of the strong legs of ESMA. Okay. Correct?
Okay.
Sure. Well,
sorry, I think ESMA itself will need the support anyway, Chair. For us as a market operator, to have access to the necessary load data, for instance, to have access to, even at a regional level, to have a good understanding of what type of energy interventions are possible, particularly demand response in measures. Because that's one of the things we want to do with public buildings, is put them onto a demand response program. The rationale for that is that besides making these buildings more energy efficient, we can also put them in, particularly the air conditioning systems and some of the larger loads, put them onto a demand response program so that when Eskom is in crisis mode, they're actually able to effectively shut down the air conditioning. Not necessarily for the parliamentarians, but certainly the idea is that it's but certainly government department buildings, yes, to be able to shut down some of the non-essential loads in there. So for instance, to go without hot water because the geysers will be put out for a while, even if it's an hour or two. But that's a demand response measure. And it just means that we can reduce the load enough to be able to manage for that hour or two without taking out the whole system. So that's really the problem. Is once you start taking out the whole system with load shedding, that's when the knock-on effects come in terms of the economy. So for us, demand response is a far better solution at this stage. And this is what ESCOM is doing right now. It's putting industries onto them so that we can shut down their non-essential loads and be able to manage that in real time.
Okay.
All right, so the other objectives. We're looking at, this is low energy and carbon intensity. So this is about moving, in particular, our projects that are in development right now to the demonstration and commercialization phase, moving them to 40% of the portfolio. And then also to take one fully fledged commercially viable concept for every 500 million rand that is spent on R&D, to take that into the commercialization phase. And to take that through various partners such as Kia, as well as probably CIF, depending on what CIF's mandate will be. But certainly the rationale is that there will be commercial partners that can take on those projects. And our goal is to take them and transfer them over once we satisfy the technology and finance risks have been dealt with. On green industry capacity building and development, the idea is to look at the contribution from academia, so increasing the number of research positions by another further 100 additional positions. Also to make sure that even in industry that we have a skills development program that targets artisans, technicians, other skilled labor opportunities, also primarily in the renewable energy efficiency space. And the last one is to develop at least one permanent employment position for every 1.5 million rand that's spent on R&D. Now, one position for every 1.5 million rand sounds like an expensive way of creating jobs, but bearing in mind two things. One of them, we're talking about skilled positions, and secondly, we're talking about sustainable positions. So these are not short-term positions. These are sustainable jobs that are going to add value long-term. These are actually positions that will lend themselves towards further jobs being created in that space. Right, then on to working for energy, and working for energy has got three specific strategic objectives. One relates to energy provision, that's the first one. The second one relates to energy conservation, and the last one looks at, the first one is jobs, second one is energy provision, and the third one is energy conservation. So those are the three pillars that working for energy is premised on, and that's what we will be measured on every year. It's saying, and even though we're saying only 400 new full-time employment opportunities by 2017. That's 400 permanent positions. It's 400 people that will be training an additional 1,600 people, in fact, in terms of energy. So we're not counting the incremental benefits that go with that, nor are we counting the indirect jobs that will realize that. We're only counting the 400 permanent positions that we can take responsibility for. But it's an important contribution. I think given the amount of funding, in fact, for working for energy for this current year, there is no allocation from National Treasury. We are ever utilizing the previous year's allocation for the contracts that are now being placed. So we do have funding for working for energy, but the challenge will be moving forward is to make sure that we can actually get a sustainable source of funding for working for energy. And then lastly, energy efficiency has got a number of key strategic objectives. They range from defining the Energy Efficiency Agency's role in terms of being a champion to being able to target an annual reduction in energy consumption, and the figures are given, to make sure that the awareness raising is dealt with, to make sure that we can assist in achieving a 10% increase in the sales of energy efficient and green technologies, and also making sure that we have the capacity to support the certification of energy savings for tax reduction, tax rebate claims, and we've mentioned this earlier. So, and of course we have the hub, which is the Energy Efficiency Hub at the University of Pretoria. This is our main source of skills for research in energy efficiency. It's probably the best house for capacity in energy efficiency in the country, and we've got a number of publications and bursars that have come through the system already, which is helping to support the amount of researchers that we have on energy efficiency. So this one I'm going to fly through because of time constraints, Chair, but essentially what we wanted to allude to is that under the climate change response strategy, SANEDI's programs are in alignment. The climate change response strategy has got a number of key deliverables called flagship programs, which I'll talk to later. But those programs are directly, those key flagship programs are directly linked to Saneti's activities. So this is more for background purposes. Once again, to show you that the two key objectives of the climate change response strategy, objective one is more on the mitigation side, so that's reducing anthropogenic emissions, man-made emissions. The second one is more about adapting to the impacts of climate change, so mitigation and adaptation, and there are about seven key elements that are derived from those two key objectives, and those key elements target different interventions that government proposes. And those seven key elements are then aligned to all of Saneti's goals and programs, and in some cases you'll see that there's complete alignment. For instance, key element seven, which is monitoring and evaluation, is then linked to our data and knowledge management program. So as and when we have energy information and CO2 reduction data, that all gets fed into the climate change response strategies program as well. This is just further evidence of that, that even at a project level, going down to the individual projects now, like for instance the smart grid environment, that there's direct linkage to the priority mitigations of the climate change response strategy. In fact, you'll see that there are six priority mitigation options, of which carbon capture and storage is an important one, as well as smart grids, and then obviously on the renewable side and energy efficiency side. So in the case of three of the flagship programs, we play a leading role. Working for energy, where we play a leading role in implementing that. The energy efficiency and demand side management flagship program, where we lead that. And then, of course, the carbon capture and storage one, which our center also plays the leading role in. So these are my last few slides, Chair, and we've shown them before, but we've added on an extra scenario to this. Now, what this said was that in order to establish an EDI to be effective in meeting all those strategic objectives that I outlined before, we need to put in place the necessary resources. Now, we're acutely aware of the pressures that Treasury is under, and so we tried not to be unrealistic. However, these are the four scenarios that have presented themselves in the course of developing those programs. Scenario one was a rapid transition to a fully independent Saneti, independent of CEF, and also housed in its own facility with the necessary staff complement, implementing a full array of programs that link up to those strategic objectives I mentioned before. That came at a price tag of 255 million rand for the first year, a cumulative budget of about 2.8 billion over the five-year horizon. The second scenario meant that we had a rapid transition to an independent state, but unfortunately the programs that we would implement would have to be scaled down to accommodate the budget, and that would involve actually introducing only a skeleton program. So you still have the key programs active, but obviously scaled down, and that came at a price tag of 154 million rand. For the first year. Scenario three was a gradual transition to independence. In other words, we stay dependent upon CEF for at least another 2 to 3 years, but we do have a focused program that allows for us to meet those strategic objectives. That came at a price tag of 136 million rand. And the last scenario is the one that we've added in now based on the actual allocation that we have from MTF. Now, this is the allocation for Saneti that comes through via energy, and that's 50.1 million. Now, what that does do is, short of just keeping the lights burning, it allows you to only realistically implement a very, very scaled-down program. And we'll talk to that. You'll still see that we're able to achieve quite a bit. The reason why we're able to achieve a lot is because we're able to leverage from industry, from donors and other sources to make these programs work. And because industry and the donors believe in what we're trying to achieve, they're willing to put money into that, which is good. So the expectation is that we don't want to be a crutch. I don't want Treasury to be a crutch at the end of the day to support Saneti indefinitely, Chair. We believe that over the five-year period, Saneti has got ample opportunity to demonstrate why it can be self-sustaining based on projects that can be supported by industry and donors. Obviously, there has to be some government support to make sure that the resources inside of Saneti are protected. Obviously, entities within the state architecture like Eskom, IDC and others will have a critical role to play in supporting Saneti's activities as well in the future. So that last scenario is unfortunately the one we're in right now. However, as I said to you, there's a lot that is going to be done, and the following presentations, Chair, will take you through exactly what we will be able to deliver. So this is just a bit more detail on those scenarios. I have already alluded to them, except to say that in the last scenario, we are in fact in survival mode at the moment, but at the same time, there are a number of key deliverables, Chair, that I think would add value in the energy space anyway, regardless of that. So on that note, thank you, Chair. Happy to answer questions now or later, but certainly the other presentations will help to guide the discussion in terms of the details.
Rather take others, because we may find that they ask things that will be answered by others.
Sure.
The only thing is that our wish of presentation should have been on portrait. Landscape, I'm sorry, not portrait, because as it is now, very, very difficult. If it could be rearranged, because we were building our mini libraries on Sanity, so can you work out with the committee secretary to rearrange it? It's very, very important. Oh, okay, thank you. Mr. Kevin, we're at your hands, whoever follows now.
Maybe whilst the secretary is still trying to find the updated version, the version that you have is the latest that is in hard copy format. It's called submitting to PPC.
Carry on, Mr. Mahmoud.
All right.
We are short of time.
All right. Chair, I'm going to dispense with quite a number of slides that the CEO has already touched upon. Safe to say that there is a lot of alignment between what the intentions of Working for Energy are relative to the department's energy objective. Let us then go over to I think it's slide number 4 in the hard copies. We basically are looking at the objectives of Working for Energy, and we are basically saying that the main objectives are the provision of energy from a diversity of renewable energy sources. We are looking at the improvement of the quality of life of the beneficiary communities. We are looking at the contribution towards green jobs, skills development, community enterprise development, climate change mitigation, and contribution towards research into new and renewable energy options. If one were to look at the strategic outputs for the Working for Energy program, I'm now on slide number 5. The CEO has already alluded to the fact that they were looking at the demonstration of employment levels increase in participating communities. Sorry. in a folder. A folder. Saneti folder. Saneti to PTC. Saneti to PTC.
Okay. All right.
Can you then use my computer? Right now. Okay. Chair. The CEO has already alluded to the 400 jobs that we are intending to create. And once again, the focus is on full-time jobs. And the...
Carry on.
Okay. So we're looking at 400 new jobs or alternatively 120,000 person days. And the person days have been identified or defined in the Working for Water program, so it's more in line with the DPW protocols. We're looking at rural energy production and provision. Basically, the focus is going to be more on sort of the marginalized communities and areas which electrification is not reaching and some of the energization programs are not reaching. And although the targets that we're looking at are looking very small, we're talking about 25 gigawatt hours within rural areas or 5 megawatt peak electric by 2017. I think the context within which this should be seen is that we're looking at it as an incubator of, you know, a broader program that one is going to be considering going forward. If one were to look at the budget allocation for Working for Water, we're talking about, 4.6 billion rands, vis-a-vis what you have right now, which is about 25 million rands. So the numbers that we have here are more in line with, you know, the budget allocation that we have at this point in time. And of course, in the marginalized areas, there is an opportunity then to look at demonstration of energy management opportunities. Now, in this regard, what we are referring to is if we were to look at the mainstream energy efficiency program, the focus at this point in time at least is on the RDPs, on the high LSM households, where we are now looking at solar water heating. We are also looking at other incandescent lighting and all the other programs that Barry will allude to. But if one were to look at the benefits in rural areas, we still have rural areas and informal settlements. In the informal settlements, you basically don't have any insulation at all. I mean, when it's cold, you know, those shacks become as cold as ice. When it's hot, they become as hot as ovens. So we're basically looking at communities like those and in rural areas where, you know, standard luxuries of energy efficiency are not applicable, and then trying to find renewable energy-based solutions that can assist. And it will be, in certain cases, you know, very, very simple technologies like, you know, the way RDP houses, you know, could be designed in terms of solar passive design, the way, you know, the floorings are arranged, the way the windows are sized. So these are some of the technology options that we'll be looking at as contribution towards the Department of Human Settlements as to how energy efficiency in low-income households, you know, could be effected. Moving on to the outcomes, the CEO has already alluded to the contribution of various programs to the outcomes. But there are certain outcomes that the Minister of Energy has not necessarily signed in, but to the extent that these outcomes are interrelated, we see the contribution of Working for Energy as contributing towards outcome number two also, which is the healthy life of all South Africans in terms of reduction of indoor emissions with the use of the energy interventions that we are proposing. In terms of outcome five, in terms of, you know, creating skills and capabilities in the workforce that will be participating in the Working for Energy economy. Outcome 6 in the sense that we'll be contributing towards the infrastructure that will be enhancing the economy of the country. Outcome 7 in terms of focusing on rural areas, but making sure that the rural communities also become sustainable in terms of energy.
But they can balance the noise with, I'm sure we can still keep up with the temperature later,
oh,
please.
Yeah, the noise, the level is a bit high.
And then, Chair, in terms of outcome 8, in terms of the improved quality of household life, in terms of, you know, all the options, energy efficiency and energy provision contributions that the Working for Energy program will provide, and of course, outcome number 10, which is the broader contribution towards climate change arrangements. Okay, now, there are certain expectations that were expected of the Working for Energy. And I made a comparison, Chair, of the Working for Water, which is at this stage a well-oiled machine, which is performing fairly well, which is creating a number of jobs vis-a-vis Working for Energy. The budget for Working for Energy, ever since it was launched, 2009-10 it was 5 million, 2010-11 it was 15 million, 2010-12 it was 25 million. And going forward, there's nothing. Okay. So basically, we're trying to put the developmental role of Working for Energy in context to say that the program is 3 years old, and we're beginning the fourth year. And compared to its other sister programs, like Working for Water, Working for Fire, it also is intending to create jobs and skills. However, at this stage, we see the program as proving technologies in the sense that we are not developing brand new technologies as in greenfield technologies. We are basically looking at applications of technologies. Now, to the extent that these technologies have not been applied in South Africa, let's look, for instance, at the biofuels from waste, energy from waste. The concept of biodigesters has long been used. The Chinese are using it. The Brazilians are using it. And in advanced economies, the Germans and other Western countries are using that. But to the extent that the context within which we want to apply it is new, and we have instituted, you know, programs on the ground which have given us certain lessons. For instance, the cost benefit for the investments that we have done in the bioenergy project that has been implemented is such that we need to be reviewing the offering. Offering in the sense that we have over-invested in the civil engineering, where the type of digesters that we have sunk can be seen as Rolls-Royce, you know, type of digesters. So coming out of the experiences that we have learned out of the initial program, we are now looking at smaller digesters, which are cheaper, which are easier to maintain, which are easier to install, where communities on their own, in their own efforts, you know, can be able to do exactly that, where smaller communities, instead of, you know, one centralized digester, we are then able to look at maybe 3 houses, 2 households in the farming communities with their own feedstock to do their own digesters and in that way meet their own energy requirements. So there are lessons coming out of, you know, some of the initial initiatives that we have done in energy with the Working for Energy program, which will then guide us towards a position which will then inform policy as to how the application of renewable energy technologies for Working for Energy should be applied. So, Chair, what I'm trying to say is we are proving the application of some of these renewable energy technologies on the ground in the South African context, and with the budget limitations that we have right now, the Working for Energy at this stage should be seen in exactly that context. Now, if one were then to look at the specifics, we are looking at the focus area of biomass. We are looking at the biomass to energy from invasive species. Basically here we are saying there's a lot of biomass which is a waste from a number of industries, from the wood industry or the timber industry, the pulp and paper industry, the agricultural residues and the vegetation clearance. Vegetation clearance coming more out of the Working for Water program, and basically there is a creation of this stock which is available now for Working for Energy to be applied in many forms. It could be in the form of you know biogas, could be in the form of straight incineration, pelletization, and so on. So there are many opportunities which we are looking at in terms of this particular biomass source. And then the other examples that we have is we've got certain types of grasses, especially in the Mpumalanga area, KwaZulu-Natal area, and part of the Free State, which make themselves available, for energy production. And even with grasses, we are able to pelletize this. There is a project that we are looking at in Mpumalanga, which will then look at pelletization and charcoaling of grasses. But basically anything which is biomass of biological nature could be treated in the same way. The benefits of the project, once again, they tend to be labor intensive, they tend to be localized, they render themselves amenable to local job creation, and to the extent that there is a market for the charcoal industry. And they also lend themselves to bringing in some income to the targeted communities. And of course, in all this, the expenditure of households which are participating is lowered, the indoor air pollution is reduced. So there are many, many benefits which are associated with this particular initiative. The next area we'll be looking at will be on anaerobic digestion. Basically, these are the digesters that we have spoken so much about, and basically the idea is to harvest before the waste is either incinerated or treated as manure or fertilizer. We then come in between and then extract the energy part contained therein for various applications. So in anaerobic digestion, there is also a contribution that Working for Energy program does in terms of dealing with environmental consequences or minimizing environmental impacts of the waste management. In this regard, we are looking at solid waste in terms of municipalities. We are looking at wastewater treatment. We are looking at the agricultural biomass in terms of cow dung and stuff like that. The benefits of that is we are able then to extract and use energy derived from this process to replace fossil fuels. We are able to reduce the energy footprint of waste treatment plants. Basically, what you're saying here is if you capture the methane coming out of, let's say, a wastewater treatment plant, or if you are able to capture the energy coming out of the landfill site, then instead of importing energy into the plant, to process the waste, you are able then to use the energy that you are harvesting to minimize the energy intake of that particular plant, and if you have got access, you are able then to export it. Now, maybe at this stage here, I must also say that there is a sense of discomfort, as it were, with the IPP process that the Department of Energy has already initiated. There is a sense that in this respect, where the Working for Energy initiatives produce electricity, which is then earmarked for somehow the grid, then there is a bit of a conflict between the mandate of Working for Energy and the mandate of the IPP process. And basically what we're saying is we are focusing more on the research part. We are not focusing on massive rollout of, you know, over 1 megawatt plants into the grid. The main focus is on research. Number two is on smaller distributed generation plants. So as such, we should not be seen as interfering with the ICT process as the Department of Energy is already initiating. So that's a point that I just wanted to bring to the table. Now, in terms of the anaerobic digestion process, we do have a project which we started in phase one in Bela Bela. The idea here was that we should get the project. All right, let me just step back and say that this Bela Bela project is basically a piggery. A piggery, they've got quite a number of pigs which produce a lot of biomass or biowaste, which they didn't know what to do with. Now, they then decided to put up a digester, which basically manages the waste, but at the same time produces energy. Now, the energy produced in this particular exercise is such that it can be used for electricity generation, so that part is done. And there is excess energy which can be used for community benefit. Now, with this excess, what we intend to do is to recirculate the energy into the neighboring community. We're looking at about 80 households where the gas will be piped underground, you know, to those communities. Now, those households are already electrified. I think we need to stress that. But the idea is to remove the thermal load from electricity and the new scale. Now, one of the challenges with this is that we will not be able to replicate this project in other piggeries in the same way as, you know, what will happen with the Sampris Burderay project, in the sense that the conditions on the ground are not necessarily the same. But with the excess of biogas, the CEO has mentioned the fact that we are looking at how the transport sector can benefit from, you know, biogas. So we'll be looking together with Green Transport at options of utilizing some of the biogas coming out of various other future piggeries towards Green Transport.
I'm just looking at time.
Yeah. Okay.
We still have a series of other presentations.
Okay, I'm almost ready.
Time is not on our side.
All right. Okay. So just to give members a sense, what you see on the lower right-hand side is a flame. So this is the amount of gas that is not used, which is in flame. So it's better to flare as carbon dioxide and evidence methane in the atmosphere. So that gas that is flared, most of that is what we intend to use, you know, for recirculation in the neighboring community. I have mentioned the bioenergy cluster projects that we are intending to look at, but one of the projects that is going to be of interest in this province in particular is the Robben Island project, where the intention is to look at greening Robben Island, and we're looking at various technologies, but we are at this point in time looking at, you know, getting a green light, as it were, from the council. But the intention of the project basically is to remove Robben Island from diesel generation by using various renewable energy options, solar water heating, you know, for water heating, the solar generation for electricity, wind, if that's going to be accepted in terms of the visual impact on the island as the heritage site, and other energy efficiency technologies. But most of all, we are also wanting to use the waste that is in the island, you know, to produce gas. As I said, we are in discussion with the council. We have got the prime ministerial go-ahead, Minister of Energy and Minister of Arts and Culture, to proceed with the project, but there are still issues with the council that still need to be resolved. Okay, on energy management, I would say that the thinking is that we need to look at various interventions using renewable energy sources to do energy management. There are a number of cross-cutting issues that come out of the Working for Energy. Youth development, women and people with disabilities, quite a number of opportunities for us to work with this sector of the community. Skills development is very great in a specialized manner. We are also able then to bring the rural areas to participate meaningfully in the green economy. And by extension, where you have got rural communities, then we are able then to look at cooperatives which are able then to participate and by extension, you know, have meaningful participation in the economy by energy offerings. Maybe let me just dispense with this and then look at the stakeholders. In terms of organizations that we are working with the Department of Energy, the CETA, Energy and Water Services CETA, ESCOM, and targeted municipalities. We're working with a number of NGOs and, of course, youth structures to the extent that there's quite a number of interested stakeholders in the youth structures who are wanting to participate and establish themselves in the Working for Energy and renewable energy space. In conclusion, let me say that we know that the Working for Energy program can contribute towards the green economy, focusing on rural and marginalized urban low-income communities. It can contribute towards rural job creation. It can contribute towards rural skills development. And it is also and must be seen as an integral part of the Working for Initiatives under the Department of Public Works. And then it also fills the gaps in terms of the social energy provision where the mainstream programs don't necessarily participate. And then by introducing rural energy, you know, rural communities to Working for Energy initiatives, then we are then able to create services that rural energy, rural communities can actually provide to the mainstream economy in terms of electricity sold into the mainstream economy, in terms of things like charcoal being sold, in terms of biogas being sold into the transport industry. So there's quite a lot that rural communities, in their smallness, can contribute towards the economic growth as such. And then also, to the extent that we are not starting, but we are seeing a lot of potential for the Working for Energy program to be scaled up in such a way that the its contribution can contribute meaningfully to service delivery in the country. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, let's just move with Steve, Mr. Kerr.
Chairman, thank you, honourable members. While we're just swapping computers again, I'm going to start by just going through a new portfolio of Seneti per se since our incorporation of, in terms of the Act. New business development is certainly a focus area that needs to be accelerated and visualized. Before mandates, et cetera, were clearly defined, a lot of other state-owned enterprises, companies, and private sector are in the space of the renewable energy, energy efficiency, development, technology incubation, et cetera. And Seneti certainly is not wishing to take that space by monopoly. But as a national strategy, there needs to be facilitation, a catalyst role, and a developmental role starting to develop for Seneti so that we have a focus on coordination. Because a lot of things, especially in the academia, and government entities, a lot of the work is on the low-hanging fruits and the quick wins, and it's almost like a relay team. Instead of running in your positions 1 through 4 or however many they are, we find that a lot of people are all running in lane 1 and tripping over each other. So as we evolve as Sanedi, we're seeing a role fledging out for Sanedi in terms of that catalyst facilitation role, coordination role, so that we can help streamline a lot of the initiatives so that everybody plays a role in the relay rather than everybody trying to run from first place. So we've developed a new business development unit which looks after what is the new business in the energy environment. And as our CEO alluded to in his opening remarks, we need to know if we want to be an adapter, we want to know if we want to play in the front end of the space, or whether we want to just replicate other off-the-shelf technologies. And those are issues that I think are vitally important for the country in terms of off-the-shelf is working overseas, working elsewhere. We need to find out how to bring it to South Africa and into the Southern African region contextually, and then make it work under localized condition without wasting too much time trying to re-demonstrate and re-establish its bona fide as a technology, rather look at its adaptability to commercialization. So the first thing I want to talk about, and I'm going to skip some slides, Chair, with your indulgence, on the roles, responsibilities, and mandates, because I think our CEO has alluded to that in our strategic plan overview. So in the instance of time, I'm just going to get straight into the objectives. Obviously, is to stimulate the green economy, to advance the new growth part, which I think is something that we all need to play a more significant role in, to facilitate this technology development, and then to facilitate skills transfer and knowledge management. Now, in terms of new business development, we've got some exciting things that are happening. And one of those, obviously, is collaboration and linkage development with other institutions. And I've just noted a couple of the projects and the programs that we're already involved in and fairly advanced downstream in terms of doing something in a collaborative effort. The IDC obviously receives donor funding and direct foreign investment, and they've got their own funds and revenues where they approve projects and they fund commercial development of certain projects. What we have found, and it's common cause, is that a lot of the projects, because of the lack of technical management and sophistication of control, some of those projects don't reach their full potential, and then put the funding and the loan funding from IDC, et cetera, and other commercial and financial institutions, put those finances at risk, and also create a negative impression in the marketplace when a new project or relative embryonic type of technology development is funded by IDC and other institutions, they don't bring it to full maturity, then everybody has an adverse reaction and a negative sentiment to those technologies. And so we're partnering with the IDC on, especially at this stage, biomass initiatives to make sure that whatever they fund and put into market has technology support and management and project management support from Sanedi to see that those projects reach their full maturity and potential so that they become showcases for South Africa and not bad cases for the press. Secondly, we have a contract with the Korean Institute of Development Strategy where they are helping to fund this knowledge transfer and sharing around the energy sector in South Africa, and they're willing to fund some of the programs and projects, which allows us, again, then to fund, as the CEO said earlier, we don't have tremendous funding at this stage in terms of numbers from our own budget sources, from DOE National Treasury, so we've had to use money to leverage. Now, the Korean government have graciously agreed to leverage some of the money from their programs to help put it through a government institutional capacity and a framework to help us do knowledge transfer, capacity development, and human capital development on a larger scale. So it doesn't just go to one academic institute per se where they develop a silo advantage, but it goes across the board and it looks at the sector industry specific and not rather just an isolated institution. So that's another program that we're looking at in terms of new business development and how to build institutional frameworks that are sustainable and not just project-specific. We think that a lot of the times that a lot of the development work is done project-specific and not done on framework and space of institutional capacity. Then we've got some direct projects that we are collaborating with the private sector, because I think everybody would agree, Chair, that to do energy development, renewable energy development, and energy efficiency more effectively, it needs to be a very well-structured partnership with public and the private sector, foreign investors, foreign technology providers, etc. And we have a 5 megawatts, which is small by number, but in terms of building institutional framework, a project down in KwaZulu-Natal at Blythedale. It's a resort which will employ a lot of people, and it is a project that is off-grid, totally off-grid. It's a residential hotel golf course development, which is totally off-grid in partnership with the Alembi municipality, the private developer, ourselves. And, in fact, this one is a Korean company that are doing the technology development, and now we're all on board to work in a partnership and work out that collaborative effort. Then we have a consortium for renewable energy rollout. This is a partnership of private and public sector, again, looking at the smaller projects. You know, we're talking about working for energy at a megawatt to 5 megawatts. We've got the Department of Energy's programs, 5 megawatts upwards, etc. But there's a lot of smaller projects of less than a megawatt that can come in and be done in the residential environment, the small market commercial environment, that no program is picking up because they're too small. And we're developing a hub, a partnership with the private sector to pick up all of those small projects on a programmatic approach and try and get them to market through the different technology innovations. Then, second to last, Chair, we have a 30-megawatt program down in Nelson Mandela Bay. We're looking at one of the large vehicle manufacturers down in that area has run out of power. Unfortunately, the grid can't give them more power, and it would mean if they don't get an alternative power source, they're going to have to scale back on production. Scaling back of production, even for them as a local South African business, they are in a competitive market with their other manufacturing plants of their same company across the world, and they have to bid for production line numbers, and if they can't get their power sources up, it means they're going to have to scale back, which, again, is a loss of revenue for our country. And so we're looking at a cogen scheme using biomass of around 30 megawatts down in the Nelson Mandela Bay area. And then lastly, Chair, from new business development, looking at new technologies and how do we house them and incubate them, we've got a very, we've got a very interesting technology that we're looking at the moment, which is a new propulsion system that works on pressure differential. And it runs on steam, water, gas, anything that you can put through it that has mass and volume and is at pressure can move a motor, a sequential motor that turns an alternator and produces power. And we're just in the final stages of going into the test stage at Mittal Steel for a 10-megawatt combined heat and power plant to augment some of their power, just to prove the technology. And if the technology meets the criteria, then we will be rolling it into mass at Mittal Steel to see if we cannot take them, ostensibly take their peaking load at least off-grid and alleviate Eskom of probably about a 200 to 300 megawatt demand in their plants around the country. So that's an exciting new technology, and we believe that as it incubates and matures, that it will be an answer to a lot of issues where we have excess steam and CHP wastage in the country. This sort of technology can pick up and actually utilize that instead of it being wasteful. Then, if we look at mobility, green transport, and looking at the mobility issues around transport, again, a very interesting and exciting portfolio in the sense that everybody's looking at electricity as the only energy saver. And greenhouse gas emissions, Chair, from fossil fuel is probably our biggest issue around the clean environment than some of the power station and the fossil fuel thing. So just some slides, and you've all seen these before, so I'm just going to bounce through them very quickly, that we know that dirty fossil fuels contribute to greenhouse gases and cause us tremendous problems in terms of the dirty fuels. So I'm not going to go through all of those now. But if we look at $18.5 billion a year on the import of petroleum product, okay, and it's going to increase. We need new refineries. We have to look at something that says, how do we change from a fossil fuel transport economy to a alternative market economy? Now, like a lot of things in South Africa, people are resistant to change. And so we need to start looking at how to find sufficient resources to cater for this demand. And that's something that, that green transport or alternative propulsion systems are actually going to help us take away the greenhouse gases and pollutants, sustainable mobility, and technology innovation. Now, that slide our CEO has gone through, it's our vision, it's a one-step facility for information sharing, technology development, technology demonstration and development related to the use and testing of alternative fuels and vehicles. Quite simply, if we look at it, we want to support the new growth path, as I said earlier. We want to support implementation of cleaner energy, and we want to ensure the diversification of that energy supply through the program of transport. Now, this slide might be a little small, and I apologize for that at the focal length of the screen, but we have some programs in terms of we need to do, firstly, a definitive study on the status quo and the gap analysis on alternative fuels and the propulsion systems. We have a lot of people playing in the market at low level. We need, as the CEO alluded to earlier, we need some national strategies. What are the drivers? What are the rationales? What are the movers? So that as a country and as a collective, we're moving all together in the same area. Now, until that definitive study is done, it's open house on everybody trying to develop their own thing, and people are putting money into areas that possibly may be good initial phase, but if we took a long-term cost and long-term benefication, may not be the exact way to go as a country, because you may be creating temporary jobs or you might be saving some energy in the short term, but what about the long-term mitigation and the long-term effects? So we are looking at defining that strategy. Out of that strategy and the results that come from that strategy, we want to develop the Energy Mobility Technology Center. This is what the CEO alluded to as the Green Transport Center in Midrand, now moving to the CSIR campus in Pretoria, where we want to build that center as the same as a soft start, as the same as the CEDA center from DTI, where people in the transport and mobility industry can have a place to come and work and develop, especially the SMMEs and BEE componentries, that we make soft start available so that incubation and innovation can go together, so that people with great technology innovation ideas can be allowed to develop in that market space with the least resistance and hindrance to market as possible, so that we develop a thriving industry and we develop sustainable career path, not just jobs. Then, obviously, coming out of that innovation center, we want to look at the demonstration and optimization of the different fuel types, alternative fuel types. Compressed natural gas being probably the most prominent at the moment in South Africa, because we've got a lot of waste, and as David alluded to, in terms of the biomass, we can harvest a lot of gas from compressed natural gas and gas from fossil and bioenergies that can be harnessed to be used in vehicles. There's obviously the LPG. Now, there's a supply and demand issue around that, but if we can overcome that, it is still an alternative propulsion to normal petrols and diesels that we buy from the fossil fuel industry. Then biofuels industry needs to be developed. There's some regulatory issues around that that need to be sorted out and enhanced. And then the electric vehicle market and demonstration of electric vehicle technologies is something that is very embryonic in South Africa, but has immense potential, because the whole world is developing along that same grid path at the moment. And so from a point of view of alternative fuel and alternative propulsion, electric vehicles is certainly a thing of the future. And a lot of the large vehicle manufacturers are coming out in the last few months with some very serious statements about their strategies and their ideas of future. And Toyota and others like that are saying that they want to see electric vehicles in their production lines within the next 3 to 5 years. And as South Africa, if we're going to look at being an adapter, an early adapter of those technologies, we need to start gearing ourselves for that transition even now. And going with all of those things, Chair, is obviously the international collaboration and knowledge sharing, so we don't try and reinvent wheels that have already been developed and replicated in both developing countries and developed countries in the world. We need to adapt those and move forward very rapidly so that we stay on the front of the cutting edge. And then one of the biggest challenges for us is the public advocacy and market readiness of programs. Energy mobility, as I say, those are the things that I've alluded to, building this national center where we have a transport incubation hub where we can take what we've got and help people develop. and then all the different programs, as I've said, we want to develop the demonstration projects in terms of LPG, CNG, etc. So those are just all the strategic outputs and directions that we want to do in the current year. Just because of time, Chair, I'm going to skip that. That is just a further breakdown of what I've alluded to. If I look at projects in the pipeline for this year, which I think is of interest to the House, the Energy Technology Centre, obviously we want to develop the soft start facilities for SMMEs to be incubated and developed. We're looking, we've got a small budget of 400,000 rand from Seneti, and we need about 2 million for the year just to develop the centre in terms of physical infrastructure, not the projects itself, but just the infrastructure. And we are negotiating at the moment, and we're at advanced stages with the DOT and the DST for money to put into that project as an incubation soft start centre. The electric vehicle demonstration, we got money last year from the AIDC, the Automobile Industries Development Council, and we got 1 million from them. We've matched it with 1 million rand from Seneti, and we're building three vehicles for electric vehicle demonstration to test not only the battery packs but also the propulsion systems. Then we have a CNG, the compressed natural gas, going into taxis as an alternative fuel. Initial indications, we've done a few vehicles up in Johannesburg. We want to now replicate this either in Durban or Cape Town, depending on the availability. Durban seems to be very progressive in wanting to move forward with us, and we're looking at about 100 taxis to be developed there with the associated infrastructure. And our initial estimates show a 20 to 30% fuel saving per month running on compressed natural gas. Then we have the BRT bus system that we want to look at, because that is fixed point of route, and they come back to a depot, so it's easy to convert some buses and then run them on CNG to show that it can work for larger scale public transport. And that's going to cost us about 6 million. We're negotiating again with DOT and DST for finance around that. And then to do these projects, obviously we need the harvesting of the gas and the infrastructure to refuel those vehicles and run them on those propulsion alternatives. And we are in a joint venture partnership with the University of Johannesburg and other private sector and other public stakeholders to actually develop the strategy of rollout for the CNG development. And with that, Chair, very brief, very short, and very quick, I thank you.
Thanks very much. But I'm not sure whether it's me. I didn't see the first part of your presentation in the documents that I got.
No, Chair, with apologies, the first three slides were not in the handout. We will make those available to you.
Okay, that's fine. Who's following?
Members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity. When it comes to the electricity distribution industry and the technology, there are a number of ways in which one can take this presentation. The one is you can just take a minute of silence and then leave and then ask who will take accountability afterwards. Or you can try at a high level to summarize and show what's happening in this industry. I think first and foremost, as we speak today, there is an opportunity for us to do something. There is an opportunity for us to deal with the performance in the distribution industry by leveraging technology, and in a couple of slides I'm going to try and demonstrate that. I think this picture, we might argue, is old news. We all know it. It's really just an indication of where the age of the facility is going, where the cost and revenue is going, but more important also where the customer service is going and service delivery is going in general. I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to work that out. If we then just jump to a few of the slides, that is a perspective that's also common knowledge, and people might say we get irritated by keep on hearing that there is a backlog which is now sitting at 32 billion roughly and it's growing by 2.5. The point is that we also knew in South Africa that we're going to run into a generation crisis, but we waited until the crisis hit us, and then we want to do something. So it looks like we're a nation that only wants to respond when we're in crisis. Now this thing is going to come and haunt us, and some point or other it's going to catch us, and the question is then how do you fix it then, because you are not going to fix it without investment and a hard focus on the process. I'm going to jump then to the next slide, and I'm really just going to summarize it. I think we have taken a decision, and today is not about debating the decision. We have parked the reform of the industry. The question is, in the interim, who's doing what, and how are we going to rescue the situation? I think there are, however, some things that we have to face, and Saneri plays a key role in it. The CEO alluded to a number of those points. We're talking about renewables, we're talking about energy efficiency, we're talking about electric vehicles, we're talking about public transport, we're talking about distributed generation, and we're talking about storage. How on earth are you going to integrate that into a crippled system? That's the reality that you confront. So all of the smart initiatives that we've got ultimately will embed in the distribution business, which is under the control of the 174 municipalities in Eskom distribution. Now, if that thing is sick, how do you get the rest into it? And I think that is something that one can be a nice guy and say, hey, the committee will throw me out now and I'll never come here again, and give that perspective, or you can be honest with the committee and I decided to go the latter route. I think between now and 2020, it's very clear that we're going to invest about $250 billion in the distribution industry. For a marginal additional cost, we can get the thing to work also. And therefore, my view is, let's target that then and get the thing to work in the way that we would like to see it. I'm just going to jump through the slides in the interest of time, Chair. This is slide 9 in your pack. What we are really saying, there is an opportunity to get the electrical infrastructure and the technology, and i.e. getting the information out of the system, to work together. As we speak today, I challenge you, try and find a picture which is consolidated of the South African electricity distribution industry in 2010 or 2011. The closest that you'll get is get a picture in 2008. And I know it because we worked hard on that picture. We don't have a way of getting data out of the system. So if you introduce energy efficiency, we've got no way of measuring it whether we're getting it right. So until you decide to overlay technology on infrastructure, you're never going to get it, because as long as you depend on individuals on the back of a cigarette box to give you the numbers, you will never have a consolidated picture of the industry. That is why the regulator can't get reports in, because the system can't generate reports. Now, this is a simple example, but we know from an engineering perspective, if you can measure voltage in the system, playing with the voltage, we can take the demand off in seconds after you got the signal to reduce it. But if you don't have the capability, how do you do it? And I think these are some of the challenges that these using technology can assist us with. And basically, this picture tried to chase is to summarize it. We believe if we position technology to work harder for us, it will not lead in losing jobs. But it will, for example, improve the regulation and compliance capability, because you will be independently measuring it. You will be able to introduce renewable and green solutions, because the grid will tell you whether I can accommodate it and how do I dispatch it. And we can go around the circle and you can look at job creation, you can look at service delivery, which I believe is a fundamental challenge which we are confronted with. And I always use the analogy, and one must be very careful when you make the statement, infrastructure don't care who leads. You know, you can go to a transformer if a trip and say, I belong to party B, please go back into commission. Funny enough, it will not do it. You have to go and apply technology and get the thing sorted out. And therefore, these things are bigger, I believe, than individuals. It's really in national interest that you have to start addressing these type of challenges that we do have in the country. The next slide then really gives us an indication of where we want to go. Currently, we've got a level, and let us not create the picture of everything is falling apart and nothing is working. There are a lot of things working. But what we have in South Africa today is a situation where we get data into a center point, and there's no mechanism to convert the data into management information. And that's why if you ask a question, it takes you 4 weeks to get an answer. Because somewhere we might have data, but we don't have the capability to convert it into management information. What we are saying with technology, we can use the technology to convert the data into management information without getting rid of the people. Many people believe if you introduce technology, it leads to job losses. We can demonstrate that that is simply not the case. I'm just going to jump then to a further slide in the pack. And what we are really trying to do in that slide 18 in your pack, we want to move from this passive persistence methodology and way of running the industry to an industry where the customer can participate in the grid, where the generator can participate in the grid, where we can get information and data out of the grid, that we all have sight of this black box. At this point in time, it's a massive secret. Only a few people know what's going on in there, and I don't believe that is in the interest of our country that we have that type of situation. So there are certain considerations that one needs to look at. We believe that we need to apply more of a system thinking in this process. We believe that we need to get more people involved in this process. And we also believe that funding currently does exist in the industry, but it needs to be reprioritized. If we look at the DORA allocation and many of these things, one just has to start asking the question, where is the money going? If we look at the budget allocation on specifically municipalities and how much has been returned to Treasury every year, then I don't understand why we can't sort out our backlog. So somewhere we need to apply our minds before we say we need a tariff increase and a million other things. What are we doing currently with the money? And perhaps that is the point where we have to start. Now, what we have done, as the CEO has indicated already, I sometimes get the feeling they've put a rope around our neck and throttling us slowly, but to try and survive, we have now gone to the industry, come to the table, and let us prioritize with your money and rescue the national interest. And there is a level of progress and success. So part of that progress in that space chair, and I know I'm rushing through it now, it's under the guidance of Saneti, we've established now an industry working group. Not as if working groups will always resolve everything, but if you want to have buy-in and you want to do find a solution for the people, you do it with the people. You don't find solutions on behalf of people without the people. And I think that's the modus of operandi that we're doing. So we're really trying to leverage out of municipalities, out of suppliers, money to move this. So we are going to move forward now with an integrated and a coordinated initiative where we're going to facilitate standards and also look at interoperability, because one of the things that we have to hedge is the potential dumping of technology. If you don't get it right, you will get it from countries all over the world and end up with something that you've got something but it can't speak to anything. And then we want to leverage work being done in the industry at this point in time, and we also want to direct the move towards an intelligent grid. And we don't propose that everybody will have everything. We want to have horses for courses. If you want to have remote switching of customers, and funny enough it is there, we can do exactly the same as the telecommunication industry. You can switch a customer on and off after hours. So if you pay by internet in the middle of the night, the facility is there. You can switch them on condition you leverage the technology. When the little bars come up on the TV, say the system is under pressure, you can measure the voltage and you can drop the voltage and many people can still stay on. But if you do not have that capability, we will only have one thing, on or off. And for the engineers, I get the feeling we're using alternating current, but it's moving now to the phase of alternating between on and off. And I mean, that is not what you have to have it, you know. So I think these are the challenges. But there are certain decisions that we need. We believe that if you really want to get this infrastructure and technology sorted out, you need an interdepartmental committee that can start looking at this thing and focus on and provide industry direction. You can't run such a big industry with no direction. I think we need to have access to perhaps one or two municipalities to start undertaking the modeling and roll it out and do application research, not textbook stories. Get it on the ground, make it happen, and pump the money into it. I think that is one way of demonstrating you can go. I think the funding allocation to position the grid technology enablement in South Africa, that is key. But I think, Chair, the bottom line remains, who will be the South African intelligent grid sponsor? Who's going to lead this? Because industry alone cannot lead it. You need leadership that somewhere comes and says, guys, that is what we agree to. That is the direction. Technologists and engineers can unpack and make these things happen. But to get them to all face in the same direction, and I'm speaking as an engineer, is not the easiest thing under the sun. So, sorry for the rushing through, but something that I'm passionate about. We can take 4 hours on it, but I know we're overstaying our welcome just now. Thank you very much.
Baie dankie, meneer. Gespaar dankbaar. But just a small question. Has this been presented to the department?
We are in discussion on this with the department, Chair, because it's part of our strategic plan, so we are in discussion as we speak at the same time with the department.
Bye, thank you.
Green energy solution.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I think I'm going to go very quickly through my slides in the interest of time. But I just want to mention the three pictures that you see on the slide are things that have been actually done at Canary. The first one is the battery through the project that Canary did. There's a battery-operated car at the bottom, and in the middle there's the first installed solar-powered light. Barry can tell you where it is and if it's still standing. And the third one was a mini hybrid. You can see the solar panels at the top there. Yeah, and then here is like a windmill. And this was a project done in the Antarctica. And right now this this unit is standing powering a small radio station in Hermanus. Basically, why do we need to move to renewable energy? This is a worldwide overwhelming move for renewable energy because of climate change, of increasing oil prices, and most of the electricity fleets are actually old, and the prices of renewable energy technologies is coming down, some technologies faster than others. And then why does South Africa then need to actually follow what's happening in the world? We are a very fossil fuel intense country, so we really need to reduce that dependency on fossil fuel and also we're reducing the dependency, and then we are then diversifying our energy mix with renewable energy. And I'll skip a few slides. The renewable energies that you're looking at are biomass, solar, wind, and ocean energy. And these are natural resources, and they never run out. And the reason why we're looking at them, and they're sustainable, they are environmentally friendly, and they support job opportunities. And in South Africa, we're very fortunate because they're very geographically dispersed. And this is like a job. And just to show you that in South Africa, we have one of the highest solar irradiation in the world. Our wind resource is considerable, as we can see. And we have a lot of biomass that can actually be utilized. And we have a reasonable waste resource to be harnessed. And this is basically talking to the slides I've just shown you. And as the CEO had alluded before, that Canary is creating centers of research and development, and we are in the process of actually establishing the Renewable Energy Research and Development Center. And the reason we want to do this, we want to coordinate the research that is done in all the South African institutions. We want to facilitate the collaboration so that we do research that actually has application. And we want to assist that the technologies that you get out of the work that you do is meet standards and is evaluated and contribute to the skills development and actually also support the industry that's growing, and also have public awareness, because I think the public needs to know what all this renewable energy is all about. This this slide just shows you all the service offerings that the record as a center will have, which is basically all I'm talking about: public awareness, talent development, product development towards conversation. Right, so I'm going to talk about the projects and things that we're currently doing or are planning to do. The Wind Energy of South Africa is a collaborative project which I think has shown much success, that we can actually assist industry, because basically the project is about mapping the wind resource in South Africa to be able to support the wind industry in developing their wind farms. This is one of the successful projects that Saneri has had. The first verified wind atlas was launched now in May, and we've been inundated with people wanting to know more and get more information on the project. And we are have established record. So right now we're in the process of mapping out what's happening in the research landscape within South Africa, what technologies and expertise that we have, and what collaborations then we can therefore form from the work that all these research institutions are doing. The great ones are things that are in planning. We want to have a concentrated solar PV demonstration so that we can actually prove that, in as much as the PV technology is actually quite demonstrated and very known in South Africa, but the concentrated PV technology is not known. So with the demonstration, we want to learn more and train more people in actually running those plants. The two demonstration projects that we do, the testing and development of the second generation biofuels is a project it's a demonstration project that's coming out of the work that we have done in the previous years within Saneri through the biofuels chair, which we actually held together with the Department of Science and Technology. Now, because in worldwide, this kind of technology has not been really tested. There are very few plants which are running, and they're still also in testing, in demonstration phase. So we would like to have a lignocellulosic plant here in South Africa. And the second one is a waste-to-energy project, which we did together with the University of the Witwatersrand, which basically takes waste and converts it to energy, and it's based on the Fischer-Tropsch, the sulfur process. But it is in a small modular units. So you could take whatever unit that you build and move it along, and you can use to convert the waste, municipal waste, biomass, into energy. The last project is, right now we're struggling to find a home for it. It's actually to have a fabricated house, not a brick house, a fabricated energy efficient house. So looking into and integrate within this house renewable energy. So we have this fabricated house, which is energy efficient, totally insulated, which will have a solar water heater. But because it's a fabrication house, so there's a manufacturing component in it, so there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to actually sell the idea, housing, DTI. And the third project is a project that we're actually doing in collaboration with the TIA, GIZ, and the IEA. We're basically looking at a solar roadmap for South Africa, where we can have all the stakeholders involved, not necessarily on the technology. You can have a technology, but it not necessarily be the right technology for the country. So if you have all the stakeholders, so you know that you have this roadmap, and what role should other people have in implementing the roadmap. So we're planning to have our first workshop with all the stakeholders in the next 2 months. I think most members do know about the initiative that's been driven by the Department of Energy, which is to actually have a solar park. So one of our activities is to actually support the solar park. Firstly, we will be putting up a measuring station in the solar park site, so that when the solar park gets built, there is reliable data on how much how much sun they can actually get. But further, like we are right now looking at having a test facility within the solar park, so that we can assist the developers on the solar park, and also be able then to localize some of the technologies coming out of the coming out with the developers. And we also want to train technicians and also graduates at our R&D demo center. Our collaborators, like locally, we collaborate with the national higher education institutions. South African industry also collaborate with the science councils. Of course, I mean, we collaborate with our government departments, especially energy, science and technology, and environmental affairs. Most of the work that we do, as CEO had alluded, we do because we leverage the money that we get, and we get donors to put more money than we can be able to actually do the projects that we can do. And also we try and get information from our international partners, so that we don't duplicate effort, but actually learn from the work that they've done and also their mistakes. Thank you. I really tried very hard.
Thank you very much. The next person.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My job is with fossil fuels, which will come up in a minute. With fossil fuels use, notwithstanding the work that is being done in in renewable energies and energy efficiencies, our fossil fuels will remain our mainstay of energies in South Africa for quite some time to come. And this has got no signal, which is, you have it there.
Good. Yeah, just get on, sir.
Yeah, okay, fine. Which is damn useless, actually. Because it has certain things which I wanted to illustrate through animation, but for some strange reason this thing's not working. So I think the first thing is that we are about 75% reliant upon fossil fuels. We export about 70 million tons of coal a year. There is an interrelationship between our exports and our local use of coal. We cannot consider them in isolation. There is going to be an increase in use of renewable energies and energy efficiency. For the next few decades, we're going to remain reliant on coal. So what we need to have a look at is clean fossil fuels, and in particular clean coal technologies. So our future relies with fossil fuels in the meantime. This is very embarrassing. We have at the moment, if you go to the next slide, you'll see the fossil fuel roadmaps. The roadmap itself, we have underway a coal roadmap, which is a joint venture by the Department of Minerals and Energy, and also the industry and Saneti. And it's looking at how we can look at coal over the next three decades. The first phase is due out very soon, and the phase two is in process of happening now. You can pull that on there, the bees. We are internally trying to look at a similar fossil liquid fuels and gas roadmap to look at the R&D roadmap. As you'll see later on, that there is a large number of R&Ds required.
Go to Anna.
No, go to
just go to whatever. That one there. Here we are. It's sort of working. So what we need to consider is, when we're talking about clean fossil fuels, is the environmental impacts. We know we have to stay with fossil fuels for a number of decades. We need to look at the transition measure, the clean fossil fuel technologies. And what I'm going to concentrate mainly from now on is on carbon capture and storage. And very briefly, what I'm going to do is, as far as carbon capture and storage is concerned, is try and explain what it's about, the reason for it, and it's not something new in what we have been doing over the last 50 years. If you go back and you see, some time ago we had to go through a de-smoking process. Eskom was under a lot of pressure in other industries to stop putting out smoke into the atmosphere. We put in de-smoking, bag filters, which are static precipitators. It costs money. De-SOx, Kusili now has to have a de-SOx, it costs money. De-NOx costs money. De-carbon, it's part of the same process to decarbon our energy economy. In carbon capture and storage, the principle is pretty simple. You extract the carbon dioxide before it enters the atmosphere, and then you bury it underground. It's very simple. And what happens is that there's four stages. You'll see as you capture it at a capture plant, you put it in the pipeline, you take it through, transport it to its injection site, and you go deep underground. We have a cap rock, and you can put it into an appropriate porous rock where it's stored. It must be deep. It must be very deep, usually 1 to 2 kilometers. And you'll see here we have sorted the scale. It goes right deep into a cap rock over a porous rock underneath, and it's a rock, porous, sponge-like. It's like a sponge. It's not a cavern. It's a sponge. You take an ordinary piece of rock, and you can see minute holes in there, and that's where it's stored into these little gaps in between here. It's permanency. There are several stages of the permanency. At the end, the carbon dioxide reacts to the rock and mineralizes and becomes part of the rock. So over hundreds of thousand years, it converts into rock itself. Geological storage, this is the case of the Sleipner field in Norway, where they actually take gas from a deep formation. They refine it at the top, they extract the carbon dioxide, and they inject it into another formation. And you'll see in the next slide, this is 1994, you can't see anything. In 2001, you can see the carbon dioxide. It's been detected by seismics. In 2008, you can see it's been going horizontally, it spreads, but not vertically. It doesn't come back to the surface. As long as that cap rock is in place. So world projects is not something new. It's been done in many parts of the world already. Most of these projects are for enhanced oil recovery. In other words, what you do is you force carbon dioxide into an oil well and push the oil out another hole. So you can actually recover more oil than you would otherwise. And these have been going for the last few decades, 3 to 4 decades. It's been happening. The Snøhvit and Sleipner are the only two that's being done at the moment for environmental purposes because of their carbon tax. The issue here is that carbon capture and storage is not new, but what is particular to each country is geology. Every country has its own geology. We have to understand that geology. We have to make sure that our geology is going to be properly safe, has integrity to store CO2 safely. And the other part is the regulatory system. And the Department of Energy is in the process of developing a regulatory system. We know it works. It's a scale-up issue. And also the integrity of the storage site is utmost. The Center for Carbon Capture and Storage was established in March 2009, and we can see we were able to leverage funds. Sineti put some money into it, and from that was able to leverage some funds from Sasol, from Eskom, from the Norwegian Embassy, and from British High Commission, plus these other local industries. we'll see later on that has been sufficient to take us far enough down the line. This is the charter signing ceremony by Minister Sonjike at the time. This is the roadmap for CCS in South Africa. The first stage was, is there potential? That was done in 2004 by the Department of Minerals and Energy. The Carbon Atlas was launched by the Minister in October 2010. That Carbon Atlas has put South Africa on the map internationally for CCS work. Our test injection is planned for 2016. The first injection of gases, we hope, is about 2017. This purpose of the test injection is to look at the proof of concept for CCS in South Africa. Can we inject in South African rocks? We need to prove up the potential for CO2 storage in South African rocks. And then we're looking at a full demonstration plant. So it's a fully integrated demonstration plant in 2020. Capture, pipeline transport, injection, monitoring, verification. And then we're looking at a commercial operation about 2025. And we're going up in stages. So the first stage looks about 10,000 tons, put it into the ground, understand how that works, put in 100,000 tons and understand how that works, then we're putting in millions of tons when we get to commercial operation. The Atlas itself was published in 2010. That's the front cover of it. It was a totally South African project. Even the diagrams inside were produced by the Council for Geosciences. We didn't take anything from anywhere else. And what does the Atlas tell us? Well, it tells us, this is a summary of the Atlas. You see these black spots here. The size indicates approximately what our storage capacity would be. These small ones on our coal fields are we can store carbon dioxide and unmineable coal, but it has a tendency to sterilize the coal, means you can't mine it later on without having to release the carbon dioxide. And these other ones are for deep saline aquifers, and we have a few depleted oil gas fields off the coast here. There's two onshore places we're looking at. Either of these places, we're looking to do the test injection itself, because it's less expensive to do it onshore. How much capacity do we have? We have 150 gigatons of storage capacity at an effective level. What does this mean? If we want to store 40 million tons of carbon dioxide per year for 100 years, we need 4 gigatons. We have 150, we only need 4. There's reason to go ahead. Projects underway. These are the projects that we have underway within the center right now. This is in preparation for the test injection. The first injection is scheduled to take place in 2017. The critical paths, these are the critical paths for the test injection. There are other work we're doing as well. The ones in blue, we have finance for. The ones in orangey, yellow color, are not yet financed, but these are now become big projects. We're looking at, say, 1 or 2 million rands per project in blue. These two orange projects here, we're looking at exploration, 30 to 50 million rands. First indications for the test injection itself, about 300 to 400 million rands. To date, to date, we have had low-cost, low-viability projects, book studies. The worst thing that can happen to you is you drop a tome on your toe and it breaks it, or you get a paper cut. Not much is but going forward, we want to do exploration. We want to do seismics, probably set up some explosions. We have to do drilling. And this has its own level of liability. And it's also a higher cost. So we're going from the paradigm of having done the work of preparation into actually implementing. And we hope to be implementing in terms of exploration work next year. I think this is a summary of all the work that we're doing within the fossil fuel section. The carbon capture and storage gives just an indication of the timeline and the total amount of money probably be required over that period of time. As if some of that has been secured already. The roadmap, the research we need to do in clean coal technologies for the coal roadmap will be determined by the roadmap and similar to the gas roadmap and to the oil roadmap. And I think that brings to the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Saric.
Who is following Dr. Saric? Okay.
Chairman, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity, and I also apologise for arriving a few minutes late. Parking was a bit of a challenge. In the interest of time, I'm also going to flip through the slides quite quickly, focusing on some of the crucial elements that are affecting us right now. Energy efficiency as part of Sanedi, we said that's an integral part of the work, and I think it's been alluded to over and over. It's a cross-cutting effect, as the CEO said this morning, and it's been mentioned in a number of presentations. It is obviously the flavour of the month in South Africa right now, given the current situation as far as our generating capacity is concerned. These are all covered in the presentation and in the strategic plan, but I think what's critical here is when we talk about energy efficiency, we talk predominantly about electricity efficiency because of the situation we have with Eskom. But we're seeing increasingly more and more problems with liquid fuels and other energy carriers. And we believe that energy efficiency is energy efficiency, not electricity efficiency. And we need to expand that to look at the other energy carriers, look at diversification, but also look at conservation within those areas. And that's where we see that we can play a role that is over and above what's been done in a routine manner by most of the other organizations that are involved in this. So I'll focus on two slides, basically, and this is one of them. In terms of the strategic objectives for the energy efficiency component of Sanedi, these are the areas we're looking at. There's a number of building blocks as far as energy efficiency is concerned. The ones where we in discussions with the Department of Energy and others, is where we should be focusing our attention. And the one is to have an independent energy efficiency champion. There's so many people talking about energy efficiency coming from different angles for different reasons, whether it's political, social, economic, and other reasons. And we need to have a champion that can bring this all together and that the public out there can see as an authoritative voice, but also an independent voice, not talking just in the interest of, let's say, an Eskom or other institution. Energy efficiency awareness, very big problem, we do believe, is still the situation. More and more people are becoming aware of it, but we do still see numbers of buildings where we see lights on in the middle of the night, and we see street lights burning in the day, and we see all these elementary ways of wasting energy not being addressed, and that indicates that there's an overall lack of awareness. The tax incentives is something new, and we believe that over time this will probably replace all the current forms of funding through the DSM funds and others, because it's a sustainable way of funding energy efficiency. Taxes have been here since day one, and they'll probably be here forevermore. But things like the DSM fund through a surcharge on the tariff, at some point people are not going to entertain these very high tariffs to fund energy efficiency through my tariff that I'm paying at home, which is incentivizing, let's say, an Anglo to be more efficient, where they're declaring massive profits every year. So why should I be contributing to taxes? As long as I'm paying taxes, I should be able to qualify for the rebate and the energy efficiency rebate in terms of tax incentives that have been introduced the last 2 years and which is growing now. I think it's probably the way that we'll be able to sustainably finance energy efficiency and clean energy going forward, and we're playing a significant role there. Energy efficiency in public buildings has been spoken about in a number of the discussions, and we believe that government has to lead by example. Government has to be shown to be doing the right thing if we are encouraging other people and introducing regulations for the broader public to follow. We should be doing it ourselves. Energy efficiency technologies, Chair, you mentioned that earlier, and I'll just give a brief indication how we aim to attract or affect that particular area. And then the EEDSM Hub, we tend to speak in acronyms far too often, but that's the Energy Efficiency and Demand Side Management Hub that we have at the University of Pretoria. And I've brought some documents on the work that they do in terms of peer-reviewed journals, research that's been done for the library. But there's six areas there, but a lot more building blocks, and we specifically put those blocks, showing them that they're not in any particular order, because we believe if we continue building on this energy efficiency in an uncoordinated manner, we're eventually going to see a collapse of those blocks, and we're going to end up with a serious problem. There's a lot of duplication happening and a lot of probably unnecessary funding being spent. So that's the efficiency role. I'm not going to go into that in detail. The public buildings, what we're saying is that we believe we can play a role is moving public building energy efficiency from intent, and I think the intent is there. We see a lot of talk around it, but moving it from intent to action. There are documents, there's reams of documents and audit reports and so on public buildings, but we still haven't managed to actually move that into action and make energy efficiency in public facilities a way of life. And there is work being done. There's a lot of activities being done, but what we're proposing there is a cooperative governance structure where different departments come together under an independent program management office that can look and bring all the parties together. Because bearing in mind public works, they are a landlord by nature. That's their mandate. And the Department of Energy has got to look at energy policy. You have science and technology looking at new developments. And things like renewable energy. How many government buildings do we see with a PV panel on the roof? Not many. So we're saying program management office, and Seneti can fulfill that role. But the biggest thing, Chair, is the financing of public buildings. There was a three-year program after the NERC process where National Treasury made amounts available, starting at $125 million, then to $85 million and $50 million for energy efficiency. Those amounts weren't spent, and a lot of money was given back to Treasury. But the problem with that is the savings that are accrued as a result of those interventions all go back into the bigger fiscal pot, and it's not reinvested in energy efficiency. Now, if you look at public works being the landlord of approximately 103,000 buildings, that sort of funding that you need to make all those buildings efficient, we're talking about mega billions of rand. And you cannot do that through a typical fiscal program. So what we've proposed and spoken to Treasury and others about is to create a fund that can be at the IDC, it can be at the DBSA, where you have a revolving credit facility. Give money. There's lots of donors that want to make money available for energy efficiency. Eskom Demand Side Management Program have offered to put in 75 million rand. But then the savings that are accrued from those buildings must be reinvested into this revolving credit facility and then put back into energy efficiency in public facilities. You see that as the only way that you'll be able to finance the rollout of energy efficiency in a sustainable way. And that is the proposal we're putting forward. The second one is on energy efficiency levels, and you'll see the documents we set specific targets, but we need to determine the baseline. Someone mentioned earlier about not being able to measure what we're doing. We have to determine the baseline from which we can actually measure the impacts. And energy efficiency awareness, we see significant benefits. There's case studies where in the United Kingdom, for example, they achieve a 23% energy saving just as a result of awareness. No technology intervention, nothing. Just by consistently making people aware of the benefits of being energy efficient. Just going back to that one, I've made a point there at the bottom there, portfolio activity support, about the advice that we need to demarcate the roles and responsibilities. Awareness and communication is a big area, and I've used those words, and I've put them in inverted commas because they might not necessarily be the right words. But there's certain political communication that has to take place around energy efficiency to attract foreign direct investment, to bring more industry into the country, and that's the high-level announcements that you see in terms of the reserve margin, in terms of what we're doing relating to the nuclear build, in terms of when new capacity will come online, the policy regime around energy efficiency. But then the non-political messaging, that's talking to the man on the street, and we believe that's a different message. It's a different speak, and it should be probably demarcated where you have government looking after the political messaging, and when you have an agency like Seneta, they can talk to the public and not convolute the matter, because from government, we understand, you're talking about, one day you're talking about the nuclear program, the next day you're talking about integrated resource planning, the next day you're talking about something else, and energy efficiency gets diluted into this bigger picture, and that's what we're proposing going forward. Energy-efficient technologies, since you mentioned that, Chair, is we believe that a 10% real increase in the absorption of energy-efficient technologies is achievable. And we're saying that over and above existing trends. Technology development is phenomenal. We're seeing new technologies. We just have to take cell phones where they started 10 years ago, these bricks, where they are now, and a cell phone does virtually everything except phone. It does everything else. And technology, we believe, on the energy efficiency side, we mentioned previously, going from incandescent lamps to compact fluorescent lamps, and we're already down to light-emitting diodes, so the LEDs. Significant changes going from the 80% saving to now a 90% saving of the 80% you've saved. So that is a natural evolutionary process, but we believe over and above that we can still see a 10% increase. But a 10% increase, we're not tracking the sale of appliances in the country. No one will be able to tell you now how many appliances are we selling to what market and what's happening with the old products. A typical example is refrigerators. Middle to high income people will buy a new refrigerator, very efficient, state-of-the-art technology, saving a lot of energy, making more cash disposal available. What happens, they typically pass on that refrigerator, the old one, to the domestic, and the domestic then uses it and then passes it on to the family at home in a rural area. That refrigerator is probably using between 10 and 30% more energy than the one I'm using in the house where I can afford to pay my electricity. We're now passing this technology on to the people that can least afford it. Yes, there are other benefits like hygiene, and people are only too glad to have a refrigerator where they've never had one. But it's probably the most perverse thing we can do. We need to take those old refrigerators out of the market, scrap them, crush them, and make sure that the products that end up in those markets are exactly the same in terms of energy performance. And we need to track them, and that's where we think through appliance labeling and our support to the Department of Energy, we can actually achieve significant benefits in that area. The tax incentives, I've spoken about that, Section 12I, Industrial Tax Incentives for Energy Efficiency, 12L, which we're hoping to have out by the end of May, which is a broad-based energy efficiency tax incentive. Critical area there is the monitoring and verification. There we're working with trade and industry, SARS, and National Treasury providing that service on their behalf, because you can measure and verify your energy efficiency intervention to, let's say, a variance of 5% either way. But when you're working with SARS, you've got to be accurate to the last decimal point, because if people are inaccurate with their measurement and verification, they're going to jail. And so this has become critical in this particular area. The energy efficiency hub, we've spoken about a lot. This is a resource in the country that is phenomenal, internationally acclaimed. The director of the center is an A-rated researcher, internationally acknowledged. They are the targets in terms of the numbers of students, the number of courses that are being offered. Really phenomenal work, and as I said, I'll leave this year for the library. But what I put there at the bottom, Chair, is that this is a national resource, and I believe that the work that the Portfolio Committee does, you've got access to lots of people that are advising, but I believe you could possibly use the Centre for Energy Efficiency Advice as well to guide you in terms of what work that's been done and in preparation for certain presentations that have been made. These people are really, really rocket scientists, to use Tony's word. So, afforded the opportunity, we believe in energy efficiency, Seneri can provide a cooperative role, can a collaboration role, and can actually make sure that we get a consistent message out there, and it will then lead to all the benefits that we know are definitely attributable to energy efficiency. I want to then just to end off, show what we've got in our annual performance plan. I've linked it to the strategic objectives, those six in the building blocks, and then looking at the actual activities we plan for the very short term. And they link to the public advocacy, measurement and verification, demand-side energy diversification. We're talking about moving away from just electricity. The ad hoc project support, which is public facilities. And then at the bottom, a point for international collaboration. Because energy efficiency is so topical in South Africa is being invited to participate in a lot of these global forums, International Energy Agency, IEP, the Clean Energy Ministerial, to name a few. And we're assisting the Department of Energy because obviously with the limited resources, they can't attend all these, and we represent them in those forums and bringing that knowledge back into the country and sharing that through a communication platform to make sure that this happens. Just to focus on activity two, the measurement and verification, which I alluded to for the tax incentives, you'll see in the baseline there, the regulations are creating an enabling environment to be able to create tax breaks on energy efficiency. We have made sure that the people that do that measurement and verification are accountable and credible through a SUNNIS process. They have to be accredited to SUNNIS. But the important point that you'll see, we're starting off from a base of zero. Not one has been done yet. And we see that trade as providing a significant opportunity to create jobs in the country. It's a whole new industry. And for people to qualify for the tax benefits, they have to employ these measurement and verification professionals. And we believe that through the uptake of the energy efficiency tax incentives, we'll be able to create a lot of jobs, not quantified at this stage. We'll be able, after the first year, to be able to quantify, but we believe that can have a significant contribution in job creation in the country. With that, I'd just like to end and say thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Redenkamp. The champion is the government. It just needs to be clarified as to where the championship is located with the government. People don't elect government and just start looking for alternatives. to drive transformation in South Africa in particular. That must be very clear. But as a small comment, it's the first time in my 7 years in this parliament to see a presentation that clearly articulates what is required or requested from the portfolio committee. We definitely can be able to respond very, very succinctly. Thanks very much for that. Very, very clear that on this issue, this is what the role that we would like to see the portfolio committee doing on behalf of Parliament. I trust and hope that will be the trend for Sanity, for the department, or even for anyone else in any case, if we are to play a role in transforming our country for a better life for all. Thank you very much. Now that we have set all the projects, what support services do we plan to have? Notwithstanding that we have only 50 million bucks, that we're aware. Over to you, ma'am.
Chair, members, colleagues, thank you for this opportunity. My presentation is very quick. It's just based on support services, which is more the softer issues, the more easy to understand issues. I'm in no way saying that it's not important. It's definitely dependent on those notes there, and for me, I see it as the lifeblood of any organization. My first slide is going to be on people issues. I think we've moved from the traditional approach of people management, from personnel management to more people management or human capital management. Under people, I would be chatting about staffing, capacity building or skills development, conditions of employment, staff benefits, and we'll move on to logistics where I will give the current scenario, where we are based and where we envisage going. My last slide is based on other resources. This is the current human capital staffing at a scenario. We have like 21 posts. So this gives you a picture of a bright, colorful, innovative, young and old team that we have. I'm in the middle.
Why there, I want.
And Tommy here is a fossil.
And you'll see these are the scientific symbols that actually depict the sexes, the males and the females. The current vacant post that we have, which are funded, is a senior manager post under the Green Transport Program and the center manager post. We have just filled our CFO post, and the incumbent is scheduled to assume duty on 1st of June 2012, and this is very much in compliance with the PFMA Act, because all Schedule 3 entities have to have a CFO or a CA heading up the finance. We have... we have 12 contract staff and we have 9 permanent staff. What we need to do now is to have all positions in Sanery job evaluated in terms of our mandate. We need to identify the existing skills. New staff need to be appointed. And then the skills that we have, we need to actually develop them so that they could perform their duties efficiently and effectively, thereby, you know, reaching the mandate of Sanery. For training, we just have a budget of 200,000, and when you look at overall at the staff, you know, you're looking at 10,000 rand per employee, which is absolutely minimal. If one considers just a telephone etiquette course, you know, for a PA, that costs in the region of about 8,000 to 9,000. All staff are employed according to the basic conditions of employment. Where they are given, you know, vacational leave, sick leave, family responsibility leave, lunch intervals.
Let's jump to please. Okay. We're aware of
the company is responsible for social contributions, the UIF, and skills development. The employee is responsible for those four items. The current accommodation arrangement is that we are at Steph House. We pay 145 per square meter for 275 square meters that we're renting. We have like 21 staff and we've got 21 parking bays, and that's at 180 per parking bay. So on a monthly basis, we pay to Steph 43,780. We've identified a building adjacent to the existing building. It's a 4-star rating in terms of the Green Star SA rating. We plan to occupy 822 square meters there. We're going to pay 120 per square meter, and this is going to, you know, give you a total of 98,640 per month. There's balcony space there. There, the figures are all there. So in total, the rental is going to be 137,426 per month. The space in the fifth building is to be retained. We're probably looking at keeping the carbon capture, the Center for Carbon Capture and Storage there, as well as green transport. And then moving forward, we've got to look at the economics of actually leasing the building and purchasing a building. We're in the process of actually looking at a 5-year lease agreement. But I think in terms of economics, it would be better to actually purchase the building and pay towards the bond. We have approximate cost that's going to be incurred for office furniture, office fittings, office partitioning, and ICT infrastructure and cabling. We're dependent on CIF, which is governed through a service level agreement, and these are all the services that CIF actually provides to us on a monthly basis. Over a year, we're looking at paying $1.5 million, and if Saneri has to employ all these staff, it's definitely not going to cost $1.5 million. So over the MTF, I don't think that the budget is actually going to allow us to actually fill the 66 posts that we envisage. That brings you to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, let's have a 10-minute break before questions. Apologies for that. It was more of a leg stretch than anything. Mr. Mahoma, we are in a meeting mode now. I'm sorry. Questions? Comments? Clarity seeking? Honorable Failing, Lady Lucas, Mama Chivela. Okay, Honorable Failing.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Chair. Thanks for this. And sure, we've really been presented with a lot of information here, and we could discuss for weeks on some of these issues. But I'll try to keep my comments to kind of an overarching framework. I don't think we can go into the real details of this, which would be fascinating. I think we need to create some time to actually go into the details at some point, so we definitely have to call on you again. But, you know, I mean, listening to these presentations in a sense kind of inspires me and in a sense makes me extremely angry, because on the one hand, what I'm seeing is almost all of our priorities in terms of energy being listed here, in terms of the research priorities. I mean, right from CCS through to energy efficiency, through to energy mobility, all of these issues. And yet we're given a budget of 50 million rand to Saneri. And if I compare that to, for instance, Nexa, who we give 500 million rand to every year to run a research nuclear reactor. So in other words, we're giving 500 million for research into nuclear and 50 million for all of our other priorities in terms of research. And I think this has to be looked at. I think our priorities are skewed with regards to how we see the future of energy in South Africa. And it is something that we need to take up. But having said that as well, I mean, I'm also struggling to get my head around exactly what Saneri's role should be in terms of how we drive these new advances in energy. And I still, and I said it last time, and I think the point is still valid now, is that I don't think it's so much about demonstration projects. You know, the technology is out there. When you travel the world and you go to places like Germany and you see them having deployed 4,000 biogas digesters, getting huge amounts of energy from that, this is not new technology. We do not have to actually demonstrate this stuff anymore. What we need to do is we need to mainstream it. And to a certain extent, our renewables project in terms of the rebuild is fine in terms of actual grid applications, and we're getting some of that coming on stream. That's great. And the private sector will take care of that. What Sunedi needs to do, I think, is we need to properly identify what are the institutional barriers, what are the infrastructure barriers that are currently holding back the deployment of renewable energy, particularly down at the lower levels, particularly at the residential level, particularly at the kind of municipal level. That's the kind of stuff that we need to see coming out of Sunedi so that we can then be empowered to say, this is what has to change in the country if we really want to see this transformation in the energy market that we are looking for. That's what we really need to see from you guys. And so I'm hoping that we can work with you in terms of doing that. I mean, the municipality stuff, I mean, we fully understand this. The distribution network is a major, major problem. But we're not seeing the leadership at the moment. We need to see that coming through. What is our plan for how we deal with distribution, and how do we lock it in then into the kind of smart grid technologies that we need to see coming through there? But then lastly, as one, the department chair as well, we need the overarching strategy documents too. And I think because everything I'm seeing is all kind of spread apart. It's all kind of people identifying problems here and there, but there's no coherent strategy that I'm seeing coming through. So I asked the department, where is the review of the white paper on energy, on renewable energy? That we need to have done urgently. We need to see what our long-term strategies that can identify all of these particular problems, and Sunedi must feed into that. And then also, where's the integrated energy plan as well? Because this is what I'm hearing being talked about here too. There's costs and benefits, there's different technologies, there's things going on in this field. And we need to bring this all together in a properly integrated energy plan so that we can all know what we're driving and we can all be certain about what those responsibilities are. So those are just my kind of messages to you, and hopefully we can pursue this partnership. Thank you.
There are certain politically sensitive issues that have been said. You don't answer them. You don't answer the 50 million versus 500 million. We've got a government which has been democratically elected. They'll carry the can on that, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I think what is problematic is that we appear to have identified the problem, and we haven't worked a way of how we can implement. And we're not doing this jointly. And this is why it makes it more expensive. We talk about the electric car. The electric car, when I was a little boy, it came about. But the fossil fuel, crude oil people bought the whole idea and shelved it. So are we going to go through the same process again, come up with ideas and say, this is what we can do, and we don't do it? It is time we started acting. And we really need to get together. And we must not be so many different groupings. We mustn't be in competition. We should work together for the betterment of this for South Africa.
May I move to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for all the information that we received today. I've got a question on, I would like to have a clarity on, I didn't hear, I'm sorry because I went out when I came back, about the old fridges. So I just want that one to clarify that one. The other one is, when you talk about the technologies of coal, less smoke, I just want to know, can I still use my smokeless stove? Because there was a time when stoves were made to have less smoke. But because of all of this, we had to abandon all those stoves. And with the workforce of yours, I just want to know, how are you going to have people, more people? Because the fact of the matter is, you find people staying in the same positions and aging. By the time the younger people are supposed to come in to know there's nobody to teach them. Are you creating a space for that as well? What I heard here about the shale gas, I think what you said about the smoke that you can bury under a rock, which means the story of the shale gas, which they say if you go and prospect there, you are going to contaminate the water underground. I think in some other way, when what you're saying, is it true or not true that water will be contaminated? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
very much. Very grateful for Sonetti to come and make this very voluminous presentation, but I hope I will compress it next time. Just for the first time, you did a very, very, you know, illustrative download. It gives us a very good idea. Unfortunately, with the chief operating officer, through acting DG from the department, at least she had the opportunity to listen attentively. Not that she didn't in the past, but at least in our presence. In the interest of time, I will skip a few things. But one of the things I would like to provoke and highlight is that obviously this committee must listen with concern about the operational scenarios that were presented towards financial sustainability in future. One then begs the question is that wouldn't there be any opening for some commercialization or bait limited in order to make up for the gaps? Because even the second lowest scenario is too fast a gap between 50 million and 150 million. Definitely there has to be some innovation on that. I hear there's a lot around donors. I trust and hope you did your risk analysis on that vis-a-vis dependence as well as influence, because we've got our policies as a country, and the world is littered with history of how donors and sponsorships are used to influence policies. Well, if someone has already made mention of technology dumping as well, which is not a big thing, I think you are capable of handling that one. But the one that triggers sensitivity is around tampering with our policy. That we will not take kindly to, definitely. Just another thing that one has picked up is that is there anywhere where there's a database on research and development in everything that's within your field, not just done by Sanity, pilot projects, any innovation? I'll give an example. The Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University has also a pilot project on microalgae. And I haven't heard anyone talking about it, and we're very keen to invite them. We saw that in COP17. I think at some stage, somewhere, there must be a NEF center which is aware and alert to all initiatives that are taking place in the country, you know, so that we can have a sense of who's trying to do what. Whether, not necessarily to control, but at least to see what role can you play to advance them and facilitate them for that much. I'm glad that once again the collaboration with the various institutions is being done, and I would suggest as part of familiarization process that at some stage we do some teleconference, because we can't bring all these parties together. We can work on that with Sanity facilitating that particularly universities, just to familiarize ourselves with them. I'll just pick up as I speak. In terms of training and development of staff, it would be helpful if you could get something in writing in detail down the line, as well as partnerships. We're quite keen to know exactly as to whether training and development is done as per unit, or there's one center that looks at the various sections of SANEDI, because I've had various inputs making a reference to that, and also the last input around corporate services. You know, it may or may not give a clear picture as to how you handle that one. I know some of the training and development is more technical, some of it is administrative, but there would be other technicals. But if you could just get one document that, you know, illustrates that, that would be quite helpful. Working for energy, I thought, Babu Mahoma, you'll pinch a little bit on the Elukwengo and the experience and lessons learned from that and how it would take us forward, because one of the things that we picked up on our visit to Elukwengo earlier this year was that there were, you know, a lot of dreams and good intentions about that, to the extent that even the Agriculture Research Council was invited for that project, such that they would help with agriculture. Just one thing. The other area that would need additional information, more in writing, is this potential conflict or perceived conflict with the IPP process on anaerobic digesters. Am I correct? Electricity generation. If you could help us on that, you know. And one noted reference made to rural energy industrial development or something like that. I think it's something that we will take keen interest on, and if you could be more elaborate on it in future. The ease of old appliances is a very, very interesting thing, and I trust and hope many of you are in, if not now, but you can be in touch with, I don't know, with Mexico. Let me just mention the country. I've been keen to get to know what they do. I'm not sure whether they do replace old appliances, because I met some officials from them, but they do have a program of promoting energy-efficient household appliances. If you could just keep tabs on that and share that information with us. But what we would like to see also happening, Mamzungu, is if there's any feasibility of replacing old appliances. You know, I know it's a long short, but let's think and talk about it very, very seriously, because if you actually raise a very pertinent issue. I buy an energy efficient outdoor appliance. The other one is still working, so I feel very bad to throw it away, but I'm giving it to a less economically empowered person to let's reflect that as an issue of debate in future, very, very seriously. Department of Energy, at some stage, will need to know a little bit more about the solar park in Upington, because it's part of the World Bank deal. It was raised, and we asked, and we said to some stage, but it just would be helpful to know how far is that issue going. One cannot be but help to be attracted very strongly around energy efficient housing drive. CSIR also said the same thing last year to us. Are you together in that? Because we don't want parallel initiatives on the same thing. And it's something that honorable members, we need to be very, very alert and keen on, because imagine the impact it would have. And remember our visit to Atlanta where we saw, you know, the wet sand in initiative there, which has had growing support in any case. On smart grid, I understand that there is a need for an interdepartmental smart grid task group. In fact, there is a proposal for that. Surely would support that very strongly. But the question is, when and are we going to see a broader forum that would be, in, you know, ensuring interaction between public, private, and civil society, you know, component. Of course, it's still at a technical level, but it has a lot to do with other social factors as well. I think for now, that's all I can say from my side. Over to you, Mr. Kerry.
Jay, thank you so much. I'd like to just probably start off by answering some of the, or dealing with some of the questions stepwise. I know some of the questions were actually intended for the department as well, so I'll skip those, obviously. I think maybe if I could just start off with Honorable Khailing, and there were quite a few points that were made there, which I think were extremely relevant, and I'll skip the politically sensitive ones. The issue for me is really the question, the notion of the value that Saneri adds. I think that is a critical question that came out of that particular intervention. For me, one of the key elements to consider is the so-called technology value of death, and allowing us to identify which of those technologies, because even though technologies may have been, let's just say, proven in the European context, they still do not find their way into IRP unless they are proven domestically. The same argument will apply to ESCOM in terms of technologies that they choose for their own purposes. So in their own ICEP planning process, they will also not include technologies. For IEP, it remains to be seen when the new integrated energy plan comes out to what degree they're willing to use new technologies. Now, that calls into question the whole rebid process as well, not calling into question, but asks for some form of enhancement. Because where there are new technologies that are emerging, the process that should really be followed is to say, for emerging technologies, here's the tariff. It's up to the developer to be able to ensure that there is production. All you're guaranteeing is the price. If they don't produce, well, it's up to them. The risk is theirs. Our role is to mitigate risk, to be the catalyst that helps them mitigate. So in other words, where there's newer technology, to make sure that the technology is addressed from a technology and a finance risk. And there are other risk factors that have to be considered as well. But over and above that, Jay, when one looks at emerging technologies from a South African perspective, is making sure that there's a proper incubator. Where is the incubator for that new technology to find a home? Almost every day we are inundated with people coming up with ideas. They come out of townships, they come out of universities, they come out of schools. They've got new innovative ideas. Some of them can only take them to a rough prototype stage. So you can almost get a lab scale, a bench scale model that gets produced. They don't have any means to take it further. And this is really the vehicle that Saneri needs to create, is to get through centers like RECORD an opportunity for these members of society to bring the ideas, have them tested, have them developed further, bearing in mind the incremental cost is exponential to develop a product to commercialization. It may only take you tens of thousands of rand to develop a working prototype. It's going to take you tens of millions of rand to get that product into the market. And as you can see from the jewel, that's exactly where you are now. Once you hit 100 million rand, that's when you're going to hit your big hurdle. And this is the type of thing which I think, Chair, you've also been alluding to as well, is getting to the point where we understand exactly what is going to be required. This is from our earlier discussion. What is exactly going to be required for government to sit down and say, right, okay, fine, now we can make that decision. We understand that. That's where that goal one of ours in terms of well-informed energy planning comes into it. I think the issues around identifying institutional barriers is key. In terms of whether it could be residential, could be municipal level, it doesn't matter. We're probably going to have issues like that with carbon capture and storage, because some members of the public will not understand how deep the CO2 will be buried underground, and that it will probably liquefy at those depths, and so it's not going to be released back into the atmosphere, and that it is not toxic anyway, but yes, there is an environmental impact. So a lot of those things have to be addressed. Smart grids, what is the public's receptiveness to it? It involves smart metering. How receptive are they to that?
There's many issues that go into smart metering that have to be dealt with. So I think the point is extremely well taken. Part of our process around communication is obviously stakeholder liaison to make sure that at every step of the way, the projects that we're engaged in have some form of community or other stakeholder engagement. Working for Energy is a good example. Before you can do a biogas digester project, you have to know that the community is receptive. If they don't want to buy the gas or they think it's ineffective or insufficient, they will not do it. I mean, we're wasting our time in that regard and taxpayers' money. So we wait also for other documentation, the overarching strategy documents that will always guide us in terms of our role. Maybe just to go to Honourable Lucas's question with respect to, I think, taking action immediately and not being in competition with other entities. I think that point is well taken. This is why you'll have seen periodically through the presentations we make reference to relationships with TIA, references to relationships with IDC, with the DBSA and others, ESCOM in particular, is because we know we can't operate in isolation and that we have scarce enough resources as it is, and so we can't, in fact, afford to duplicate any further than we currently are. Then, Honourable Matvela, I think the question around the fridges, Barry did allude to that earlier, but I'll just make mention of it again, and the Chair has already brought it up. But the reality is when we pass on these second-hand fridges to other people that are less economically advantaged than we are, we end up in a situation where we sell the fridges that might be 20 to 30% less efficient than the newer products. And the reality is now we create an added load on the system with the inefficient fridges. And according to question A, the need for the appliance labeling, yes, which needs to be accelerated. But secondly, schemes such as the scrapping allowance, because much like you've had a scrapping allowance for taxis, there are other consumables that we could also be considering a scrapping allowance for, even if it's a nominal amount. But we can't also deny people the access to refrigeration, so we have to be consistent in our thinking. ESCOM just the other day was giving out free LED downlighters. So the changing is moving into definitely making way for the more expensive, more efficient technology. ESCOM should be in a position to also consider assisting in that regard, but it's up to ESCOM and government to decide what they want to do in that respect. The smokeless belt, it is not that effective. I think, Tony, do you want to comment on the smokeless stove, the continued use of the smokeless stove?
Yes, use it. it's a piece of infrastructure you've bought. It's not a smokeless stove, it's a low smoke stove. And it was put in there because of the pollution caused through smoke. Smoke is bad for your health. And it was nothing to do with climate change and carbon dioxide in the days it was brought forward. Was to do with trying to get rid of smoke and infect your immediate health. But what you can do with your smokeless stove is use the Buzz and Jingle McGoggle method. It's top-down lighting, which produces even less smoke than the smokeless stove would. So Buzz and Jingle McGoggle with a slow smoke stove, it's a good transition measure. Keep at it.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe if I could just add to that. I mean, one of the projects that Working for Energy is about to commence is on the carbon fuel tablets, which is in an effort to produce a much more cleaner burning and more efficient product from waste coal as well. So that's a product that's now about to commence as well. So that's a further enhancement in that area. I think in terms of the learning experience as well, I think the idea is that we appreciate that the younger people take on the responsibilities without having institutional memory. So I think a fair proportion of the work that Working for Energy does is going to be around capacity building to make sure that there is some kind of institutional memory. We also have to look and see how we can build on the existing infrastructure in some cases. For instance, where we have IECs, the Integrated Energy Centers, to determine to what degree we can use them to enhance training, where there are further education and training colleges to help build this into their curricula to make sure that we can actually start at the school level to make sure that these practices are better understood. And obviously along the way, as we introduce more programs, they can become more designed around the needs of specific communities to make sure that we try and retain that institutional memory in those areas as well. The issue around the shale gas is controversial because there are many examples, whether it be in Australia, which is where you have current media interest in it, but also in France and other places, where you have the problem of contamination of groundwater because of the chemicals that are used in the process.
of getting the shale gas out and exploration as well through fracking. Now, the issue for us is that unless the associations that are involved, the entities and corporations, disclose the chemicals that are used in fracking, it is difficult for anyone to pronounce. I'm not talking from a South African perspective, I'm talking from an international perspective. It is difficult to pronounce on the viability of fracking because you need to get a sense of what impact do these chemicals have on groundwater contamination. There are instances where groundwater is being contaminated because Australia has got as much of a problem with freshwater supplies as we do. They are more concerned and therefore have taken the necessary steps to also curtail the use of fracking. So there are important developments that are required on that side from a disclosure point of view before you can actually go ahead and say, well, okay, how big is the problem? We do know there's a problem. How big? That still has to be determined. Tony, do you want to add to fracking or...?
If I
could,
let's save it for now.
All right,
okay.
For another year. Okay. Just to come to your, I think your particular questions as well. I think that for us, one of the key things is what is the role of the public funding with respect to a lot of what we've discussed today. I think in our strat plan here on a particular page, on page 37 in particular, there's a chart that depicts in terms of the technology development value chain, that in the beginning, that the majority of the cost is actually incurred by the public sector in mitigating risk, in overcoming those very institutional barriers that we spoke about earlier. So in that particular instance, up front in the innovation chain, you have a lot of expenditure by the public sector, which is then displaced over time by the private sector. So you'll see that there's a curve there that depicts more or less on average, what that spread should look like, and you'll see over time with some comfort that the private sector has to assume more and more of that responsibility as the risk becomes more mitigated by the state, and that's a healthy position for anyone to follow. So that just talks to, I think, the issues around the fact that, yes, there is a need right now to set up an operational framework for how that should look from a Seneti perspective, but bear in mind that as we move on, more and more of the funding will actually come out of the private sector. And you alluded to donors. Our principle is really about leveraging as much as we can. For every one rand that we get from the from government, we are trying to leverage at least another 2 to 3 rand from external sources. And so far that's proven to be quite effective because even though our allocation for this year is 50.1 million out of the MTF from DOE, we have probably doubled that. So we have about over 100 million in total that's being secured from other sources as well. So that's 50, in addition, another 50-odd million that's coming through from various areas. And some of them come from the state as well, so transport is another 10 million, and DST has got another 6 million plus the 5 or 6 million that they'll put into transport. But the international donor community, this includes the World Bank in terms of special projects and CCS, REAP funding, which is the International Partnership on Renewable Energy Efficiency, the Swiss-funded project, which is on monitoring and evaluation for energy efficiency, the GIZ, which is German-funded projects around renewable energy and energy efficiency, that is also quite sizable. And so the list continues, Chair. And with the co-funding options with IDC and DBSA and the Korean government, you can start to see that we can do quite a bit with leveraging. That's why we're very confident that if we get off to the right start, we can actually displace to a large degree the necessary funding that should come from the public sector. In terms of your question about the database, the NRF, of course, has its own database on research that's happening at a generic level, so that's covering a broad range of sectors. The University of Pretoria, through Prof. Porus, who is our main contributor on CSER for research, has also compiled a report and database on the energy research on our behalf. So we can tell you exactly what's happening on energy research, more or less at the moment, out of that particular publication and so on. So that is available, Chair.
Please avail it to us.
Chair, note it and will be sent to Chair. Thanks. I think in terms of working for energy, I think the point was noted with respect to the Lukwengweni experience. I think as we're moving along with the other projects, Chair, which we have touched on very briefly, those projects, we will all gather the lessons learned out of that exercise and make sure they don't get repeated in the course of implementing those ones.
Obviously, there is a lot of good intentions, as you've noted, from Lukwini, but at the same time, we feel that communities have also become, I think, far more understanding and appreciative of the nature of the technology now and the value that it adds. So there's probably going to be less of an issue moving forward. The conflict issues on the IPP side, on electricity generation, that has to be resolved, yes. The issues for us more or less are about the size of technologies and whether ESCOM needs to be involved. For us, on the smaller scale power generation technologies, we see no reason why ESCOM has to be involved. The municipalities or metros are more than capable of handling those quantities on their own and paying a fair tariff. I mean, in most cases, they're willing to pay a mega flex tariff, which is probably in the order of about 70-odd cents at the moment, and they're happy to do that. So we think that those projects can happen. I think with the department's approval, we'd actually be able to move some of those projects a lot quicker, Chair. And I think we've noted the concern, or the, at least the example that you made about Mexico, in particular household appliances, and that will be followed up as well, so we can provide feedback to the committee as well in that regard. Okay. I think on the issues, other issues very briefly, Chair, on the housing side, we engaged with the CSR. We don't have a formal relationship with CSR on the housing side. We have relationships with other stakeholders through the DST where it started. We have an international partnership which is currently being constructed around energy-efficient housing manufacturing. So that is still work under development. The CSR, through their built environment program, is obviously a critical component of that. So they will be brought in by default because they have a critical role to play anywhere. On the issue around the smart grids, there is definitely intentions to introduce a wider stakeholder forum. I think the intention right now is to probably start crafting the vision, which needs some form of, let's say, core group to help steer that. And then once you've got a semblance of a vision, then you can share that with a broader stakeholder group and get some constructive inputs into that, Chair. And I think that's the process that the team will be following. Okay. I think that's fine
for today. We need to get something from Sarah, I know. I think, honourable members, it's fair enough to say the proposals from the energy efficiency input, let's be given some time to attend to them and respond. First time is, as one says, that they are formal proposals that we would like the committee to do, one, two, or three. I see in the, out of our visit in August, there was something that you said you also plan to do to establish a renewable energy center of research and demonstration record. I thought you would say something about that. But in closing, what is clear, I think Honorable Freling alluded to it, that really Sanity has got a very serious strategic role to play. Whilst unfortunately mixed with politics, but we as a committee, we've got to really be quite assertive as to the extent to which Sanity has got to be resourced. I mean, even in terms of presenting, you know, from just after 9 up to now, it just shows when we are running at full speed and making presentations of the various projects that we're doing that there is a lot in your plate. Of course, notwithstanding the constraints and also the fact that we need to look at other needs of the country, but if energy has got a vital role and a catalytic role, a catalytic influence as well, you know, on both social and economic transformation of our country, and therefore if Sanity is one of the cogs in the wheel to ensure that there is that improvement. You know, I think a few days ago we were actually saying that energy is one of the inputs or cost inputs. As a result, the more we try our best to lower it as an input cost, you know, the better it is, you know, in other things, cost of running business and even cost of running a home for that matter. On that basis, thanks very much. Of course, we've triggered a lot of things that will need follow up, and obviously we will see when we do during the reporting session in September how we then, when we invite you, mold, you know. But please, let's make sure that before you come, work out a few areas that we will highlight for presentations. Badangi. Thanks very much. Mamzungu. Guwe genguku. Memu khati wa tsaba uwa. I want to. Now the department is going to present the sari. Memo Dice, yeah, one of our biggest fans. Please, just go for it.
Okay. Basically, the presentation would just be giving a brief in terms of the sari. The first slide is talking about the landscape in terms of what this South African Renewable Initiative is trying to support. Firstly, it's supporting the new growth path, the energy strategy, the climate change response, as well as the industrial policy. From the new growth path, the aim is to support the green economy in terms of job creation.
With Ukana Atamela microphone. Do we have a new member this side now? No, no. A very heavy no. No way. Remember, this is an extension of parliament. And there's a gallery. You know why? I think we need to be sensitive about that. Because in the house, you don't have people going in into the house, isn't it? And that must be replicated and respected here as well. We are an extension of parliament. And we are an extension of parliament. Thank you. Memo Khati.
Okay, as I have indicated, that the four pillars in terms of what the South African Renewable Energy is supporting is the new growth path, the energy strategy, the climate change response, as well as the industrial policy. But I think with the new shift in terms of the country shifting towards, I mean, developing or intensifying efforts within the low carbon economy or green economy, the landscape would further, I mean, grow. From the perspective of the new growth path, the aim is to support the green economy, obviously from the energy perspective, to create more jobs. Whereas from the energy strategy, it's on the responsibility or the commitment, I mean, from the South African government to intensify efforts on diversification on energy resources in a sustainable quantity and also affordable prices. From the climate change response, you would recall that South Africa made a commitment in terms of reducing its emission reduction by 34% and 42% by 2020 and 2025, respectively, under business as usual. Whereas the industrial policy, we know that in terms of implementing the industrial policy action plan, there are green economy or low carbon economy commitments which are more of developmental dynamic industrials, globally competitive and labor absorbing within our South African green economy. The objective of SARI is to catalyze a critical mass of investment in renewable capacity to support fleet procurement. Firstly, it should be noted that it's an intra-governmental initiative. It's not only supporting Department of Energy, hence like the key roles and responsibilities are from various departments. Currently, the project steering committee is co-chaired by the Department of Energy and Department of Trade and Industry. The aim, as I have indicated, that is to catalyze South Africa towards a green growth path through building of both renewable energy or generation and associated industrial cluster. we all aware that currently in terms of the capital cost when it comes to development of clean energy technologies is currently too high. Hence, we need to come up with innovative funding models to make sure that we are able to bring the cost down. The objective, I've already touched on it. This is just, I mean, a slide to give a global view in terms of what is happening in other countries, not in an exhaustive manner, but just to quote a few. Like, for example, in Germany, they have got an ecological industrial policy, which is provided to support, I mean, the feed-in tariff with a subsidy of over 200,000 jobs, and they are expecting to create even more to the tune of 400,000 by 2020. It also touches on the India perspective as well as China. The broader policy context. Currently, we know that our integrated resource plan has like ambitious targets, which we currently, starting to roll out. If we look at the power purchase, policy, the change that is now, surfacing, we're moving away from electricity to diversify other energy mix. The energy planning, the industrial policy, this is, embedded in terms of, supporting these key government commitments, which comes to, supporting our domestic policy environment, also the financing mechanism, the international collaboration. In a more nutshell, on each of those, from the target, for renewable energy, we know the national vision in terms of, the green growth, how many jobs, should be created up till the, 2015 or by 2030. The target is too high and, we're working so hard that we have to meet that. From the domestic policy side, we need institutional framework to reduce the investor risk because as investors come into the country to present, they also need certainty in terms of what other support mechanisms are there to make sure that renewables are sustainable. The financing mechanism, the aim is to make sure that, we bring low-cost loans and we deal with financial risk mitigations as part of the instruments to make sure that as we develop or deploy or scaling up of renewable energy, all these factors that may contribute to investor uncertainties are addressed. The aim is to make sure that, the funding gap in terms of capital costs as well as the end user side is bridged. On an international collaboration, we need to make sure that we develop implementable partnerships. Hence, the South African Renewable Initiative is not only nationally based, but it requires partnership even at an international level. And also bring an aspect of long-term funding frameworks for as we move forward in terms of the scaling up of renewable energies. And just to go broader in terms of the aims, it's to unlock public and private or domestic and international funding to scale up. From the South African government side, there is commitment on these ambitious targets that should be backed up. International collaboration, we need to address issues of international investors, as like I've already indicated, to enable development of a critical mass of renewable projects. And from the domestic industry side, we need to create industrial and economic benefits, particularly looking at localization, export competitiveness on energy security. On the citizens, labor, or consumer side, we need to catalyze this green growth within the country with a minimal burden. We know that, within the country, there's been a cry in terms of electricity price. So these are some of the tools that would be assisting in the future in terms of bringing the price down. So in terms of the graphs, it's just, some of the extras to try and support the SARI with relation to the integrated resource plan, which currently imposes incremental costs on the price of energy over and above coal. I wouldn't dwell much on the graphs. I would just request Mazungu to assist me with this graph in terms of the interpretation. The financing strategy involves bringing down the cost, as I've already touched on it. The capital cost would only be, brought down if there are innovative funding models in terms of making sure that all energy sources are backed up based on our South African context. And in summary, there are a range of benefits associated with this initiative in line with the enhanced energy security, industrial development opportunities, as well as the commitment we have made in Copenhagen in relation to emission reduction. And progress to date, you would recall that initially the SARI was led by Department of Trade and Industry, leading towards COP when the phase one, which was led by trade and industry, ended, and like the project was handed over to the Department of Energy. On the international engagement, the support by international research team is currently put on hold on the basis of the handing over process from trade and industry to the Department of Energy. So the administrative processes in terms of finalizing the phase one into the phase two that the Department of Energy would be leading. International review process will commence as soon as that transition has been completed. Further work will still be done after approval by the PSC. It needs to be noted that the phase one was just giving more of conceptualization of SARI. There should be comprehensive studies done on various financial models, because we're dealing with, a lot of international stakeholders. At an international cooperation level, during the COP17, or in December 2011, my apologies, it should read 2011, the South African government signed what we would call the Declaration of Intent with the following governments: the United Kingdom, Denmark, Norway, Germany, and the European Union Investment Bank. And discussions are still in progress with other countries. The Declaration of Intent, I need to allude to the fact that it's still at a higher level. What needs to happen now is to have the MOUs at country-based, because each of these countries, as they partner with the South African government, they have got their own conditions, and they still need to be researched in terms of making sure that the interest or the way we would be mortalizing, the debt that comes with this partnership, it's at a reasonable, or it complies with all the policies within the country. And this process in terms of the funding model is led by National Treasury. The current initiatives on progress, SARI was mandated by government and adopted as part of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, as well as one of the tools that would, assist the country in support of the climate response policy. National Treasury is working on financial models together with DBSA on how SARI can be contextualized within our own context. And this should be taken in light that the conceptualization is also taking into account the already existing kind of models. Like, for example, in Norway, they've got more to SARI initiative. They call that Energy Plus. And other countries, we're comparing that at an international level and try to contextualize our situation to what would be best for the citizens. The DOE is working on the institutionalization of, SARI. As I have indicated, that the program now has been handed over formally to the Department of Energy from Department of Trade and Industry, but that doesn't mean that trade and industry is out of the processes. it will still be part of the project steering committee that would still be leading in terms of the industrial policy action plan. Each of the government departments that are participating on the project steering committee, like for example National Treasury, would be leading us in terms of financial models. Energy would be looking at the energy policies. Environment would be looking at, I mean, climate change issues in relation to our own approved policies. So the project steering committee is addressing all the roles and responsibilities of the key role players when it comes to our green economy landscape. And as it stands, it needs to be noted that we need strong ongoing cooperation between, I mean, these key departments. There is no way that one would, I mean, run with the, all the policy legislative landscape as it stands, because it's a cross-cutting issue. It's not only embedded within, I mean, the energy sector. I think I've already touched on this. The transition that I was referring to is basically to say, since the Department of Trade and Industry has handed over the program formally to the Department of Energy, at the moment the administrative processes in terms of the Minister of Energy accepting the program formally is in progress, and also we have received the handover report in terms of what has been done, which informs what still needs to be done in terms of the outstanding or what we would call completion of the SARI framework. And so far, the program is funded by the Trade and Industry, and during the handover process, the DTI has committed to fund, I mean, SARI into the next 6 months, but not exceeding that. We are in discussion with Department, I mean, National Treasury in terms of the future of SARI within the Department of Energy, because the handover happens at the time when the MTEF has already been completed. This was not budgeted for, but like these are the discussions that are being taken on a serious light and in a positive way as well from the National Treasury. Because we need to create, I mean, home for the program so that it's more effective and well implemented. And that would be the progress thus far on the initiative. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mamudise. Honorable members, over to you. Yes, Baba Khrilin.
Thanks, Chair. And I know that we don't have much time, and also that I can't really fight with you on this one. But I do think that we do need to fight with somebody, to be honest, because quite frankly, I mean, SARI was conceptualized about 2 years ago, Department of Trade and Industry and Department of Public Enterprises. It finally came to conclusion. When I was in Germany last year, in fact, the Germans were asking me, what is happening with the progress of SARI? You want to do it? We're talking about billions of rands here that these six countries have put aside to say that we want to fund renewable energy in South Africa. We have to access this stuff. We can't now be kind of playing around with different models and things like that. We need to start moving on this. This is a very exciting model. We were one of the leaders in terms of making sure that we had a model year to access funds from the international community to support our ambitions around renewable energy. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing that sense of urgency, and I'm not blaming you, and I'm not blaming the Department of Energy. But I think that what we do need to do is we need to get the people around the table here, such as National Treasury, Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Energy, and we need to get a thorough progress report as to how we're going to take this forward. Because if we don't start to access these funds, other countries in the world will be doing that. You know, there is huge amounts of competition to fund renewables around the world. And if we don't start to get this right, people are going to start to move away from this. So that's my only plea to you, and I'm not fighting with you, but I am saying I don't think we're treating this with enough sense of urgency, and I'm hearing rumblings from some of these international funders saying we're not happy with the progress. And I think that we do need to put some urgency here, given the size of funds that are available and the fact that they're willing to support us on this. I don't think we can waste time on this anymore. That's my opinion.
Well, thanks, Chairperson, and I want to thank the department for having given birth to the new child. This is a new child, and we are happy that the child is born. And is born of the thinking that we are having in the African National Congress that the times of the department to operate as silos is over. It doesn't help us because we are not able to implement in silos. You can only do this little, and you must say the next must be done by someone else, but we have no relationship with that person. Now, it's good that we are beginning to see an integrated approach in dealing with this particular matter, and we hope that this child, within that, guided by that integrated approach, will become one of our most healthiest children. The last slide, slide number 12, makes reference to a commitment by GTI to finance SARI Secretariat services for a period of 6 months. And that the international stakeholders are being consulted to support the funding of SARI. Can we get more about how far this consultation is, whether there are hopes for success? I hear Dr. Greyling saying they are putting pressure on him, they want to come in. They want to come in. Can we just hear from the department how far the consultation process is and whether that kind of support is likely to come through whilst there is funding. In other words, whilst DTI says we can fund for 6 months, and whilst there are processes of consultation with the international stakeholders, we do not want to see a period where this child is hungry. There's no food in the house. And there's also a statement here that says National Treasury to provide. Is there a commitment on the part of National Treasury to do that, to provide for funding of the SARI Secretariat in the long run? Thanks, Chairperson.
Just to add on what you're saying, I thought there would be some kind of a budget or financial projections, if not a budget. I know, Mama Zungu. Maybe a tricky area, but just to say financially, this is how we see us ourselves emerging, one of ourselves. Because already, Honorable Failing has said there, even if just to indicate that there are these commitments, you know, a commitment doesn't mean that money is on the table, but just to have a sense on the financial, you know, resources, I hope will help us on that. Martin.
Chairperson, just on the slide 12, on the appointment of the secretariat, how far are they? Because the DOE has been having problems with human resources for other projects, and now this is adding another burden to the department.
Okay, can I quickly chip in myself? Support of fleet procurement. If you could just explain, what are fleet procurement? Another question is, South Africa is part of BRICS and IPSA. My instinctive expectation would have been that that component could have been part of such a brilliant initiative. Any reasons why they are not yet part of this? Or what are the prospects of them joining this initiative. Thank you.
Yeah. Whilst we're still there, when we spoke to NERSA, it was yesterday, we spoke about regulation. You know, NERSA is this regulator that survives on tariffs and levies, actually by levies. Among the funders, as we talk about this, how do we see, and we asked specifically NERSA as to what role it will play on the alternative energy, which is renewable. And they said in their understanding, this is the same energy that is currently happening. The only thing is that the sources are different. They have just been doing it from coal. They will be doing it now from other different sources, but it falls within the same scope, which means they will also put in some levies in the same manner as they are doing it to coal energy. How do you see them coming in to the issue of funding as we have just been mentioning it?
Would there be any creative space for SANED to tap from the funds when they come in? Thank you. Kevin, I said creative space.
She's a board member, she's conflicted.
Okay, thanks. I will start with the questions, including concerns raised by Honorable Freeling. The point on the sense of agency. I just need, to reassure the committee that government is committed in terms of dealing with the sense of agency that you indicating. When Sanedi was presenting, the chair commented or made a remark in terms of donor funding that we need to comply to the policies within the country. You would note that, we're not just talking about grants, because if it's grants, there isn't, too much conditions because you don't have to pay back. But like the SARI comes with, various categories in terms of the funding vehicle. So we're talking about soft loans. Each country has its own conditions. So those are the legalities that we need to fine-tune so that at the time when, the initiative is being rolled out, we shouldn't be saying we didn't look into this. So it requires extensive work. Hence, maybe you're seeing the slow part of it. Maybe we're not communicating enough in terms of the comprehensive work that still needs to be done. Hence, National Treasury is taking a lead on this, and they're giving us progress, every time in terms of how far the models are. But they're working together with DBSA. And, to the fact that it wouldn't only be DBSA, other financial institutions would also be brought in to contextualize our situation. I think we are very much, sensitive when it comes to, shielding the poor from high prices. So those are some of the things that, SARI is trying to address. And you would know that there were several working committees under the IMC on energy that did some work. SARI is also taking into account some of the recommendations that came out of different groups in terms of deployment of renewable energy. And maybe I should leave it there to say the sense of agency is being addressed, and it should be noted that each of these countries, as they partner with South Africa, they come with their own conditions. And you still need to take into account the conditions that come with loans. So those are the issues that we are addressing. But I believe, in the next 6 to 7 months, we should be able to come and present the various models, share with you on what came out of the comprehensive work that is being done now. But we're taking a note that people are, impatient in terms of, when are we rolling out SARI, but the concerns are also raised directly with us in terms of we seem to be a bit slow. It's not because National Treasury or DTI made it slow. There are policy issues in terms of the way the initiative is. It's a cross-cutting issue. Hence, I indicated the landscape to say as much as Department of Energy is dealing with energy policies, there are financial issues. We have got industrial policy action plan issues. All those need to be aligned and integrated so that they talk to each other as government or as a country. We're saying our landscape supported by SARI, this is how it comes in terms of IPEP. When we're talking about our PFMA, this is how it relates with it, including, our own energy policies, the integrated resource plan, as well as, where we're taking the country in terms of seeing to it that the commitment we have made in terms of emission reductions, we're reducing it accordingly. In terms of the integrated approach, there was a cabinet decision taken in October 2011 in terms of making sure that there is that integrated approach. Hence, you're seeing the PSC is comprised of all the key government departments to make sure that policy-wise, the framework is integrated and aligned. There was a question on appointment of the secretariat. The arrangement within the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of the current funding for the secretariat for the initiative was up to August. So the commitment that has been made within the DTI is in line with what would have happened even if the initiative is still within the administration of DTI. In terms of the commitment as well from National Treasury, they're taking the matter very serious, and they have noted the point that the handover happens at the time when the MTF, the financial planning process for the current financial year is being completed, but they're assisting us in making sure that we get funding as soon as possible. In relation to the international stakeholders, like, for example, the current discussions in terms of also supporting the secretariat, Switzerland has already is committing to that, though in paper we finalizing the administrative processes. But like there is that, positive response that we're receiving from international partners, but we still need to make sure that the house is in order in making sure that all the policies are talking to each other in terms of operational guidelines, they are also adhered to. The fleet procurement, maybe it's just for lack of a better word, but here we're referring to economies of scale. When we buy, we procure in a massive scale, surely that would bring the cost down. The issue around why BRICS not yet part of the initiative, I wouldn't say they wouldn't be part of the initiative. The countries that have already signed the declaration of interest, once they heard about SARI, they approached the country and they were ready to sign even before or at the time of COP. Others are still knocking, and like it's been clear that at the moment the initiative would be open to all potential partners who are willing to partner with us based on taking into account the South African policies and also our context. Because if you look at, the countries that have signed, most of them, they're doing well in terms of renewable energy deployment, and they understand the African context in terms of, like, for example, if we were to talk about areas that are not electrified. They are not talking about that in their own areas, but they are happy to assist South Africa to meet some of the key government objectives. Will there be any creative space for SANEDI to tap from SARI? At the moment, I think it's still early for me to respond on that issue because the financial models have not yet been completed, and like I can't say yes or no. Once the financial models are very clear in terms of the identified key players, who would qualify, who wouldn't qualify, I think that would be the best time to respond to that. On the NERSA response on funding, I wasn't part of the discussion, so I'm kind of not informed enough in terms of the yesterday's discussion. I would assist Mazungu to assist me on that.
Mazungu.
I would say, Chairperson and all of the members, that would be a matter for NERSA in terms of their processes. I don't think I do have an answer to that at the moment. But I think Chairperson, in conclusion, I don't want to spend too much time like yesterday on my conclusion. I think in conclusion, Chair, on our side, I have noted a few things which I'll be taking up with my bosses when I go back. Those would include the issue, of course, on the baby that seems to be having too many mothers, unfortunately. And once your baby is born, got too many mothers, they've got different ways of dealing with teething problems. So others will use the traditional way, others will use the new technology, and this is what we're going through as a department. But the commitment on the side of the department, I have to admit, it is very high, especially on the side of the Minister and National Treasury, fortunately. Because once National Treasury is on board, it eases up a lot of things. On the issue of the secretariat process, I think without trying to cloud the whole process, the secretariat process at the moment is being done with the inside the department with the extra time that people can get out of their busy schedules, including my colleague next to me, who is one of the team. We don't have a fit secretariat environment admin unit at the moment, but we are hoping that within the next 6 months, as she has indicated, the money that is coming from DTI in terms of what has been given to them in the budget will be able to give us at least a minimum of three people to start working, which would be the person in charge of the process and whatever administrative assistance that individual would have. We are planning as a department to actually pitch that position to a minimum of a chief director, because we need someone who's going to be very independent in how they work, number one. And secondly, we need someone who's going to be able to deal with the international platform where he or she would be operating. So we are hoping that probably within the next 6 months, as my colleague has indicated, we should have a set up, a secretariat and environment for the SARI. We will follow up the issue of... On SANEDI issues, I would say we've had a number of discussions with SANEDI. On a personal note, I think we still need more discussions with SANEDI, because there are some issues which, as far as I'm aware, have been discussed within the department itself. When it comes to issue of the conflict of the IPP and the Working for Energy programs, I would have expected to have been discussed in the department. But like I said, I will follow it up with my colleague, Mr. Apane, just to make sure that I've got this thing properly. Other than that, Chairperson, I don't think there is much that I need to say. There's the issue of creating a space for SANEDI to tap on the funding. As soon as we've got it, you'll be the first to know. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that one. We know we need to respect your processes, but you can see where we're pandering, where our bias is. But people, thanks very much, honorable members. But this was very...
Can I say, Chair, that there may be many mothers, but the father is one.
Comrade love. Okay, many mothers, but one child and one father.
Yeah.
Look, I really appreciate the passion we've handled today's two institutions. It's very rare that we do it in this way. And I hope the energies that have been triggered will also obviously energize and bring the desired results as we move down the line. Obviously, you've given us and articulated the plans, and around September, during the reporting period, we'll bring an update. Not that we'll expect a lot, but at least a couple of things, even as Mazlunga said, would have been thrashed out helpfully. And Mazlunga, it would be fine if during the reporting period in September that when we bring back USARI, we do it in a multi-pronged way. We explore, not explore, but we get other partners as well, just to come and handle this. I think we need to be quite passionate, honorable members, when we see such kind of institutions. And Parliament must be seen to be doing its best to give support and provide leadership where necessary on initiatives like SARI. Thanks very much to Honorable Khleding to be consistent and even more than passionate and us on this matter. I'm sure his passion is contagious now. We all are very eager to see the lift off of SARI in the near future, and hopefully the National Treasury DTI will release, or whether it's the two of them will release the bugs pretty soon to ensure that the Secretariat and whatever can be operationalized does get operationalized. Mamundi said we take note in Mazungu what you have said about the various complications. We need to meander all through all these landmines, but at the end of the day, we would like to see a SARI that lifts off. I mean, as we all know, we are in phase two of the renewable procurement, the IPP procurement, and the third phase is around what? October, November, August, you see. And I'm sure amongst those things, SARI must actually begin to emerge as well and become this clear institution so that we can see it contributing to the procurement work that you have done, you know, such that we can see a better prospect of handling big demands sooner than later. With those words, thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned.